Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Think of the prestige.
No.
Think of the respect.
No, no, no.
Think of the Tony.
Tony, 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 Tony.
Hello, all you theater lovers, both out and proud and on the DL, and welcome back to Broadway Breakdown, a podcast discussing the history and legacy of American theater's most exclusive address, Broadway. Normally we do the big move, but we are currently doing our Tony series, because guess what, y'all? It's pudding season. It's time for some pudding. And like John Miscavige and I said 4 years ago, it's time to compare apples and bacon. So let us bring on Gunkle of the Pod, Adam Ilsbury, to discuss some more possible Tony nominations, because also your host, your boy, the least famous and most opinionated host, Matt Koplik, has seen some more shows since the last episode. So we should talk about it.
Hello. You're way more ahead than I am. You've seen far more than I have this season.
I've seen a lot this season. The only thing I haven't seen that I officially missed was the collaboration.
Which I did see.
Yeah. Would you say that's an option for set design? I heard a lot about the screens in that.
I mean, I wouldn't say no, but I also, it wasn't like there was a whole lot about it. It was a unit set that was his, in Act One, it was like a sort of gallery situation, or the first part of Act One, it was like a gallery situation. And then there were walls that sort of folded open to create Warhol's studio. And you just sort of sat there for the rest of the show. And they did use projection. There were screens on either side of the stage where they, at intermission, did sort of like a fake reel, like the two actors had filmed like their collaboration process of like painting. They like painted it onto the camera, essentially.
Sure.
But no, I mean, it was a nice looking set.
So we talked about this last week with the theater lovers. First of all, Adam, how are you today?
I'm feeling the award season.
Yeah, it's begun.
Good, but I'm feeling it. I don't know. It's not like you can't search on my social media and see what I do, but I do work for a Broadway press agency. So there's some stuff that I will remain mum on for this podcast. But honestly, we don't have anything that I know is going to be a contender that I would have anything really ill to say about. I've been pretty happy with what we've gotten to represent this year.
Yeah, and the stuff that you guys are representing are like big players, not things sort of like a shot in hell.
Correct.
But yeah, but this is where we get to have some fun. What have you seen recently, Adam, that is a contender this season?
Let me pull up my Instagram. Well, the most recent thing I saw Shucked this past Friday. Uh-huh. And I'll be going back again actually for tomorrow opening.
Nice. Yeah. I should probably have my review ready for opening.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Shucked, Sweeney, I saw, back at the beginning of last month.
Mm-hmm.
And then prior to that, back in December, was Collaboration, but I can tell you what I've seen this season of Broadway stuff.
Let's compare our Broadway stuff that we've seen this season, shall we?
You are so far ahead of me, but yes. Okay. I saw, Into the Woods,
mm-hmm.
Kimberly Akimbo, and Juliet. I almost said Phantom of the Opera, but that's not eligible this year, is it?
I mean, best revival in 3 years.
Right. Oh my God. I hope that version doesn't come in. Some Like It Hot, Collaboration, Sweeney Todd, Schecht. Those are the ones that, those are the Broadway shows that I've seen so far this season. I know I've got a lot of catching up to do.
Grand. So here's what I've seen, and we'll just stick to Broadway because off-Broadway, right, she ain't eligible this season.
New.
Musicals. We've seen Kimberly Akimbo, Some Like It Hot, Schecht, and Juliet, Bad Cinderella, Almost Famous, K-Pop, A Beautiful Noise, Sweeney Todd, Parade, Into the Woods, 1776, Dancing, The Kite Runner, A Christmas Carol, Fat Ham, Ohio State Murders, Ain't No Mo, Pictures from Home, Leopoldstadt, Top Dog Underdog, Life of Pi. We just saw Life of Pi, and we last week saw Schecht and Sweeney Todd as well. And Piano Lesson. And I think that's it.
This has been a packed season.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And there's still how many things still have to open before the season completes? It's like 12.
Well, so first of all, I am seeing A Doll's House a few days after this episode comes out, and then I'm seeing Thanksgiving Play a few days after that. Mm-hmm. I am not seeing Camelot until I believe the day of the nominations are announced, or maybe like the day after.
It's Tuesday the 2nd, I think, is the nomination day.
Okay, then yeah, I believe I am seeing Camelot. Yeah, I'm seeing Camelot on the 2nd, so the day of the nominations.
That could be potentially fun.
Yeah, well, so yeah, we can get into that in a second, because I've heard some things, and I'm sure you've heard some things, and I just spoke to someone today about it as well. So what has to still open, first of all, Prima Facie still has to actually start previews and then open. Summer of 1976 starts previews tomorrow, I believe. That's Laura Linney, Jessica Hecht.
Right.
Schecht opens, we are recording this on Monday, April 3rd. Schecht opens tomorrow. Camelot has to open. And I think that's it. No, Fat Ham has to open. And that'll be it. That should be it. But yeah. Oh, no, sorry. And Thanksgiving Play has to open. So yeah, we still have a few. It's not quite the insanity of last season's April, where it was literally a show a day. This is...
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And things kept getting pushed back, too, because shows, more and more shows still didn't have COVID coverage. So it was a lot of people having to move their dates around.
I think a lot of people learned from last season, because the mentality used to be, well, if your show's a hard sell, you want to open towards the end of the season, get good reviews, get the Tony nominations, and like 1-2 bam. And that's proving less and less the case. I mean, you still have the shows that do open at the end of the season and do well, but you know, every time someone goes, oh, no show ever opens in the summer and does well, and I go, okay, Hamilton, Moulin Rouge, Hairspray.
Yeah.
Hairspray really bucked that trend. And
right. And well, because Hamilton had word of mouth and stuff. Like, I mean, Hairspray had an out of town, but it didn't have like the in-town word of mouth that Hamilton had.
I remember this is us off topic, but Hairspray, I remember what did it was Variety reviewed the Seattle run and basically said, if they can shave off 15 minutes, they've got a classic here. And everyone was like, oh, like it wasn't even anything needed to be overhauled. Anyone needed to be recast. They were literally like, just cut out 10 to 15 minutes and you're golden. And so it made everyone very interested. And I think Good Morning Baltimore had the demo of that had made the rounds in New York. So everyone was intrigued.
There was that like three-track demo CD that everybody had.
And then it was one of those truly word-of-mouth overnight things, because I think someone went to the dress rehearsal of Hairspray in New York.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and said that it was like every number brought down the entire theater in a way that wasn't performative, in a way that everyone genuinely was like, I can't believe I'm watching something where every song is a fucking banger.
Yeah, and no, it blew the roof off the joint.
Yeah, and it, overnight that thing just became the thing. But yeah, that was, unlike A Chorus Line or Hamilton, it did not transfer to Broadway with so much buzz that it was already pre-sold. Because even the movie itself, while that's the most popular John Waters movie, it's not like an industry onto itself. John Waters is not a household name that sells $30 million worth of tickets. But we digress. How do we want to get into this, Adam? Do we want to cover a category? Do we want to cover a show and talk about where we think it may lie? I mean, you just saw Shucked if we kind of want to, and I just saw Shucked if we want to talk about that show's cancer.
Sure. I mean, or do you want to do, we can do category and discuss shows within each category. I don't know.
Let's start with Shucked. I also want to, I think we should start with Shucked and then let's do Sweeney. And then we can start going category to category from there.
Because there's some stuff we can probably breeze through pretty quick.
A lot of place shit I can breeze through. Yeah. There are...
You're going to have to be the one that does it, because...
Here we are.
You're alone. Here we
are. Honestly...
It's not for lack of want.
Leading actor in a play is going to be a fascinating category to me, because it is there are so many stellar options, and there are people who are going to just be... You know, 6 months ago, I would have told you they could have been a front runner, and now I'm convinced they could get shut out. And... Last year we had 7 nominees, but that was such a freak of nature that doesn't.
Because
it's supposed to be 6 if there are close enough votes in the tallying system at the for the like the last 2 nominees, and that must have just been a case where like there were 3 that were, you know, 1 or 2 votes among them. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, let's start with Shucked and then we'll do category. So Shucked, what do you think is that show's best chances at nominations?
I mean, I feel like it's set up to be pretty stacked in nominations. Maybe I think the only categories that it might have trouble in would be the acting categories, just in terms of where to put people, because it's such an ensemble show. Like even the lead, what I would call the leads, still feel more like they're part of an ensemble as opposed to like really leading the show. And I don't mean that in a shady way. It's like, it speaks to how well everyone works together in that show.
I did not see Caroline. I saw Audrey in the role of what's her face.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And she was very good. And I'm sure Caroline is wonderful.
Yeah. She was really good.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not really that is probably going to be the only role that'll be considered lead.
That's true.
On the off chance the Tonys are like, no, Andrew Durand, he's leading male. I'm like, okay, no, good for him. But yeah. I think that if they really do want to get him nominated, they would put him in featured. And that's not that he is a surefire thing with that. Just I think because there is so much competition in featured actor, it really can go for anyone.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Caroline, while she is probably going to be the only thing considered lead, I don't see her getting nominated. I just don't think it's that kind of a role.
I don't disagree. And I think it's more just because of how stacked that category is going to be from much more like front and center spotlight roles.
We will talk about leading actress in a musical in a second, because one of us might have put up his predictions again on Instagram and people had opinions. And I want to address some of them. So,
okay, great. I can't wait to hear. Yeah. But for awards that I think it's guaranteed, musical for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Score for sure.
Yep.
Score for sure. It'll get book nomination.
Totally.
I think
those are 3 things that, you know, you can't even put money down because it's just such easy money that no one will take your bet.
Yeah. I would say that it's a pretty strong chance that Jack O'Brien would get nominated for direction.
Interesting. Okay. We'll get into that.
I think mostly just because of how the evening moves. I think that he's always good at putting together a show, Hairspray included, that really sort of, you know, moves well. And I think that he's done a nice job with this material because so much of it is throwing jokes at the wall and hoping they'll stick for 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he doesn't do a bad job with Chuck.
No.
It's just, so, yeah.
There's bigger contenders, I know. I mean, he may end up getting shut out just because there's so much else going on.
We talk about bringing a knife to a gunfight. Director of a musical is like, who the fuck? And I should just say, there are people who are major contenders in that category who I don't necessarily think are doing the exceptional work that has been touted in some of the reviews. Yeah. But no one's asked me, but I will say it right now. I did text with Adam the other day, and this is just my opinion, not Adam's, but I said the New York Times out here giving out critics picks like it's candy. It's just like the number of shows they gave critics picks to, where I'm like, I saw and went, she was fine. She was not exceptional. She was fine. But we will get into some of that in a second.
Yeah, there's been a lot of picks this season for sure.
Some off-Broadway picks too, where I'm like, okay, Jan. But
other lock nominations for it. I could see Derek McLean getting set nomination. The Barn's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there aren't a lot of majorly designed shows this season, you know?
No.
Although his set design, I knew it was Derek McLean. No, it's not Derek McLean, it's Scott Pask. Because I'm pretty sure, because Scott Pask did The Visit, did he not? Yeah. I got major The Visit vibes from it.
How do we not know this?
I'm almost positive it's Scott Pask. Who needs a playbill when you've got IBDB?
Right?
It's Scott Pask. It is okay. Motherfucking Pask.
Okay. You win.
I wasn't about winning, bitch.
I know. I wasn't. I was being facetious.
I know. You facetious? I've never.
I was just, I don't know why I was... Okay, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I think Scott Pask could get nominated for his set.
Yeah, orchestrations, sound.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, sound was great.
So I saw a Wednesday matinee where the sound was a little in and out, but I chalked that up to just a bad day.
I think they may, if whatever it was, it was figured out by Friday. That sound was crystal clear. It was really, really good.
Yeah, there are a couple of musicals this season where I'm like, oh, the sound design on this is great.
I used to not notice it as much, but recently there have been so many shows where the sound has been crap that when you get a really good sound in a show, you're like, oh.
Oh, do you mean Tinny Todd?
It's a little tinny.
It's a little tinny. That's going to be the title of my review for Sweeney Todd, Tinny Todd.
It's a big orchestra, though. We love to see it.
But you can't tell because it sounds like it's playing from the other room.
Unless you're sitting in like the first six or seven rows.
Yeah, I was in row M of the orchestra. I could not have been more center of the L'Enfantine.
Were you under the overhang though?
I was right in front of it. Mm. Right in front of it. I was like, yeah. But it just did not. I could hear the orchestra. I could, but it honestly more sounded like they really wanted us to hear all the lyrics, which I get, but also sure. I want to be swimming in that music. I wanted to fucking, you know, cover my entire body.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was kind of bouncing off the walls a little bit. And whereas the lyrics were like right in my face, but we'll get to Sweeney in a second. So shot musical book score, 1000%, orchestrations, most likely sound, probably Alex Newell. This of course depends on their decision.
Their choice of, yeah, where they want to place them.
Yes. Cause I know Jay Harrison Gee was consulted by the committee of where they would like to be put. And they said,
right. They chose best actor. Yeah.
And then what's her face from and Juliet May said, keep me out of it. And we respect that decision. I don't know Newell very well. I've met Newell once at a party. Very nice to me anyway. And I, from the 45 seconds of nicest I had with Alex Newell, I feel confident in saying that they're going to want to be considered. So they're not going to, pull a May. They're going to say, no, get my ass in there.
And so it's going to be May.
Yeah, it's going to be May. Whatever category Newell chooses, I do think they will be in.
Yes.
I cannot guarantee a win yet. I do not desire to do that, but that is later. That is in May. But I think whatever category they choose to be in, they will get nominated.
Yeah, I mean that one number in Act One alone that they're giving it's pretty damn exciting.
See, okay, yes, totally agree. So here's my thing about Shucked, and I'll talk about this in my review, which I have to write in the next 48 hours. But I enjoyed Shucked a lot. I think I even texted you afterwards, like it's fine, it's fun. Mm-hmm. I went in really hopeful because some of the early reports, you know, I'm getting very very something rotten deja vu with Shucked in this terms of,
oh, like, yeah, you said that to me. Yeah.
Brand new musical, early preview reports were like, holy shit, this thing is going to topple the Tesori musical. This is the next big thing. It's the next Mormon. And it's not really the next Mormon because unlike Mormon, the plot doesn't really matter in Shucked. It's sort of incidental. And because of that, and that's fine. Like they don't want the plot to matter, but if the plot mattered, I think it would take Shucked up to the next level. Because as it stands, it's mostly just a platform for one-liners. And a third of them are pretty fantastic. The other two-thirds are either your cup of tea or they're not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point, and you just mentioned this a minute ago, like, I have to say, my experience at the show was affected not by anybody in the show, but by the people sitting around me who all felt like they had to prove that they got every joke that was being said. But in doing so, they missed some of the funniest lines because they were overreacting to things that were okay.
Yeah. People...
This is like a post... I hate when everybody's making excuses for post-pandemic, but like this really... It feels very different lately.
Yeah.
In the theater after and having returned. And yeah. People are just... It's the Wild West.
Audiences for a while now very much have been like, I paid all this money. I am going to make sure that this was worth it. And... Yeah. Now it's that plus we didn't have Broadway for a year and a half. Now every show has to be exceptional because we have to support Broadway.
Right.
And I'm like, first, this is we actually do have a pretty good and diverse season.
Yeah.
And I'm also like, can we not say that everything's amazing? Because truly not everything is. But I mean, like the audience response at fucking Bad Cinderella, you would have thought that it was Oklahoma in 1943, but only at the curtain call. They were trying real hard to enjoy it, but so many of those numbers got the most tepid applause and I've heard in years, honestly, since Diana. Since the preview performance of Diana that I saw.
I was going to say, by the time I saw Diana, that audience was ape shit.
Well, okay, so this kind of all ties into it. When I saw Diana, I saw it twice live because why wouldn't I? And at the preview performance I saw, it was mostly Bridge and Tunnel crowd and a few gays. We gays were there, tipsy or drunk, so ready to enjoy ourselves, knowing what we were about to see. Because everyone knew the Netflix stuff. The Bridge and Tunnel crowd came in being like, fuck the critics, fuck the internet, those elitist assholes. It's Broadway. We're here to be supportive. Woohoo, let's go.
Uh-huh.
And they woohooed for like the first two numbers. And then as each number continued, they got quieter and quieter. The gays got louder, but the Bridge and Tunnel crowd got quieter. And then when the show ended, they were on their feet. Oh my God, best thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, I guarantee you, you're going to go home and then at work tomorrow, you're going to go, it was pretty good. Not that it was the best thing you ever saw, but pretty good. But the cast wouldn't know it because you were cheering like they were, you know, Cher coming home at last. And yeah. I'm sort of sitting here going, you're not doing anyone any favors by treating the show you just saw as a masterpiece when you really don't actually think it was. If you want to treat the actors with respect, first of all, turn your fucking phone off.
That part.
Don't talk during the show. If you must eat during the show, do it as quickly as possible. As the woman at Sweeney Todd, Adam, who made a three-act play out of opening her bag of chips.
Oh, maybe she was the same woman that sat behind me at Shucked, because during the ballad at the top of Act Two was when she chose to open her plastic bag of whatever the hell she was eating. And then it was like full on, you know, ASMR pickle woman.
Uh-huh.
It was like that level of chewing behind me.
What a twat. So on that note, worst. Let's actually get into
So speech. Shucked was great.
The Alex Newell thing. So I want to say this because I may or may not have gone viral about a year ago from an Instagram post about, is it a good song or are they just singing high? And the truth is that I don't think that Alex's song is particularly great. I think that Alex has one of the livelier songs of the show.
It's
got a fun hook. She cute. And Alex sings the absolute bejesus out of it. Yeah. And it's really the first song since the opening number that has that same energy of like, we're here to see Shucked.
Yeah.
And so there is a bit of that we haven't had a song like that until that moment. But I also don't want to undermine Alex's performance, which I think is really strong overall, because it's not just that one song. Like, you would think we were watching Melba Moore doing I Got Love for the first time, the way that audiences respond to it. Although the day I saw it, there were two little Twinkie college boys in the front row who jumped up before the song was over, looked around trying to get people to applaud with them standing. and no one in the orchestra did. A few people in the mezzanine did. And then on a certain message board site that will remain nameless, someone claiming to be at my performance said the audience leapt to its feet at the end of Alex's number. And I was like, I was in that audience of 1,300 people, and 40 people leapt to their feet, which is fine. I'm just saying, why are you lying? Anywho, we move on. Tinny Todd, as we're now going to start calling it.
Tinny Todd. Let's see. What's it getting nominated for? Yeah. Revival for sure. Revival. I think Robin will get nominated just
he will.
Because it's because of the role. Anna Lee will get a nomination.
Because of the role.
I could see potentially, I mean, he's good, but I also maybe for slight, like minor celebrity factor, give Gayton a nomination, depending on what that category is like.
Yeah, before I saw the show, I had him as a definite nomination. Same thing with Ruthie, just based off of previous reports that like they made such huge impressions. And they still could. I think Gayton has a much better shot than Ruthie does, if only because, at the very least, you know, we have a historical record of someone getting a Tony nomination for Tobias. So far, no one who's played the Becker woman has gotten nominated.
Yeah.
Which is insane to me that Merle Louise was not nominated, but here we are. Tom Cale is going to get nominated. Fine. As I said on my Instagram, it's big, it's Sondheim, it's Sweeney. That is the Broadway equivalent of, I don't have to apply to your college. My grandfather paid for the entire campus.
Right. Right. Because we're still in post memoriam.
Yes.
Sondheim and appreciation.
And he does a perfectly fine job of directing traffic. It's a big production. It's very respectful. I'm trying to hold back because I have a review to write. They don't do really anything particularly new outside of the choreo, which is not even that exciting, in my opinion.
It's fine. You know, one of my biggest question marks on the show is why they opted for the entire ensemble to be dressed as middle class.
Yeah.
Because I don't need the entire cast to be like in that original role, has like rolled in dirt from head to toe. Sure. But like, it didn't feel, especially when you get to like Little Priest and you're like, oh, they're serving anyone, so you should be getting a variety of customer types, and you're only just seeing these middle class people throughout this entire show.
Those above will serve those down below, and right. When everyone's middle class, we're not going, you know, the high society is feeding the poor. That's
right. Well, yeah, and
everyone's
and paying. Right, and also just the I don't know. I would have liked more variety in the costumes. It sort of took away from the creepy factor for me too. Like it felt sort of clean and nice. And
there was nothing creepy about this production. But again, I'll get into it in my review. This was the least scary Sweeney I've ever seen.
Agreed. Count me in on the people who've been doing Whistlegate online. I really wish that the whistle was there, because in a space that big, you need to scare the crap out of people. And unless you've got, you know, it's not Cats, you don't have people running around with flashlights pointing them in people's faces, you've got to scare them audibly.
It doesn't feel like this production wants to scare people, though.
Which is a shame, because
it's
a musical thriller.
Literally a musical thriller. So this is what like is kind of confusing and frustrating to me, because I think just objectively, we are predicting here. We're not going off of my own personal taste or what I thought of the show, but just how this show is going to do nominations wise. And objectively, I can see it getting like minimum 10, maybe, you know, if I'm being really harsh, minimum.
You think that many?
Well, first of all, there aren't that many big shows on either side of the coin, musicals or plays, that had like these big designs. So even though I find the set very basic, and people are like, no, it's simple but effective. I'm like, it's a bridge. It's a bridge done at a diagonal. Whoopty fucking do. And I love Mimi. Her designs in the past have been extraordinary. And I don't need the most elaborate Sweeney, but I need surprise. I need movement. And that set for me was a little lumbering. Especially the fucking hook thing that twirls around. It reminded me of
Oh, when they're bringing the chair in?
No, that too, but it's like that little tower thing on the side. It reminded me of the Daleks on Doctor Who. Is that what they're called?
Oh, yes. Dalek. Yeah, it also looks like the radio tower from The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's the set just does not do it for me. The costumes, you know, period appropriate, fine. But as you said, no variety. There was no variety in Social Class. The lighting I thought was the most effective. It had a creepy element to it that the production itself did not have.
I would give Natasha Katz a lighting design nom.
Yeah, I think they're going to get nominated for all three just because, like,
because it's so big.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But it's not. I mean, I think that the design of Parade is actually far more effective than the design of Sweeney Todd. I mean, and we'll get it to personal picks in a second, but like Parade for me is truly the revival right now of the season in the sense of like Sweeney Todd is the objectively better musical. Mm-hmm. It's newsflash, y'all. It's Sweeney Todd. She good. And I find Parade to be a little frustrating because there are so many things about it that are phenomenal. And then like, every time I see the show, I walk away dry eyed. I never cry because I just don't find it overall moving. It's hard to sit through. It's very heart wrenching. It's, you know, engaging, but I don't walk away like wiped out. This revival probably does the best job of any production I've seen so far, minus the Mary Fagan swing. But the design is gorgeous. I think Arden does a really good job staging it and adding dramatic stakes to it. And Sweeney, I'm like, to quote Big Red from Bring It On, this year should have been cake, Tommy Kail. I picked an idiot-proof routine, handpicked the squad, platter, nationals, hello. And it's like, you've got a 26-piece orchestra, Sweeney Todd, and a great cast. Why am I not on the edge of my seat? Why am I just sort of sitting there going, okay.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's a Sweeney Todd that you can bring grandma to, which is ironic because my grandma walked out of the original Sweeney Todd. But yes, Annalie and Josh will absolutely get nominated. Those are roles that just always get nominated.
As far as the rest of the cast, I don't know that anybody else in the cast will necessarily get nominated.
I think Gayden and Ruthie have shots at it again. And also because those categories featured actor and actress have so many potential nominees that it really
so many.
Up in the air.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, Tom will get nominated. The design will get nominated. If they get nominated for sound, I call fucking shenanigans. Goddamn shenanigans. They also should get a negative Tony nomination for dialect coach, which I also feel a little bit of with Parade, just with one performer in particular. But Sweeney, I'm just like, oh, so it truly is a callback.
My friend, I should say friend of the pod, Dom Hanlon, who you haven't met yet. My British friend, he works in book in theater publishing in London.
He's a friend of the pod?
Friend of the pod, Dom Hanlon. Hey, Dom.
Hey, Dom.
He'll be out here next week. But anyway, he was listening to an audio of Sweeney, a live audio of Sweeney, and his opinions of, he gets so angry at Americans doing British accents. But the Annalie one in particular, he's like just so massively offended by. And I'm like, did you see Kinky Boots?
Yeah, it's
what were you expecting?
Accent. Yeah, same bad accent. So I will say as a sneak peek of my review with Annalie, I have not made it a secret that I was not thrilled about her casting in that revival when they announced it. And then if anyone listened to the Doubt episode with myself and Alessandra Gordon, I'm trying to be a little more respectful. And Allie is just full on being like, let's not talk about it because I'm going to get angry. And I will say, without going too far into it, did not hate her, but she did give the exact performance I expected her to give.
Yes.
But I also went in hopeful because I had heard from a lot of people, oh, career best performance. You've never seen her like this before. And then I went with my friend who's a Tony voter and does listen to this podcast. Won't say his name, but hello. And he went in being like, I don't think she can. He said to me point blank, I don't think Annalie can do wrong. Like every time I see her, I think she's extraordinary. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have interesting opinions on this show. We walked out. He was pretty team Groban. Even though he admitted that Groban wasn't scary, but he thought that Groban was extraordinary. And he said that Annalie was good, but he was a little underwhelmed. And I was so surprised because Groban sings the score super well, and yeah. He sings a great epiphany. I would not say he performs a great epiphany, but he sings it well. And I actually was into him for the first like 20-ish minutes when Sweeney comes home, because that is when Sweeney is sort of a shell of a man, not sure what it is that he's coming home to. And I thought that Groban, if not necessarily nailed the assignment, was in the ballpark of the assignment. It's when Sweeney snapped and has to go insane and like a demon on a mission, where I went, he's not a demon, he's just pissed off.
Right. He's inconvenienced.
Yes. He's angry, not crazy. But
right.
Anyway, we digress. So that's our Sweeney. Watch them get a choreography nomination. I will fucking laugh my ass off. City on Fire, Adam, during City on Fire, when the ensemble was doing the quote unquote movement, I just wanted to shout, cool, crazy, go, cool, crazy, go.
It does have a little bit of a West Side vibe, doesn't it? But I will say it was a moment where it felt really kinetic, and I was like, oh, I wish that the show up until now had felt a little more kinetic like this.
Sure. There were also a bit of strobe lights effect on that, or no, that might have been right before when they
it's the weird part going into Fog's Asylum
where they were doing the ballad and they just started doing a
random where they're trying to make you have a seizure. Yeah
I was like, oh, now we want to throw the audience off. Tommy Kail,
but
2 hours
and
30 minutes in, you decide
with no whistle.
I truly and I have no qualms against him. I have waited on this man many times at my old restaurant job, and he is so lovely. He's always been so polite to me. Yeah. And I think his work on Hamilton is lovely. But I think that Thomas Kail should absolutely not win the Tony for absolutely butchering the Beatles' death. The way that death happened.
Oh, yeah. It happened so fast, and then it was over, and there was nothing scary about it.
No, because it doesn't fully die. The way that they do the shoot is stupid. And the guy who plays the Beatle is so great. I'm forgetting his name.
He's very good.
John Rappin, Josh Rappin, something like that. But it's the way that they do it, because he's like not fully dead. He comes out, he's kind of like jittery, and it's 4 seconds long, and they don't even spotlight it, and there's no whistle. It's not a jump scare. No one jumped or gasped. There were zero gasps in this Sweeney the night I saw it. And even when they do the big Becker over, no one gasped.
There was a gasp the night that I saw it, and we laughed really hard, which was too bad because it was not a funny moment at all. Literally, end of the show.
Oh no.
Pat him and prick him and mark him with a B and put him in the oven for Baby and Me. Gaten slices Josh's throat. Spoiler alert to anybody.
If that's a spoiler alert to you, get the fuck off my podcast.
Yeah, it's too late. But sliced his throat, and the woman next to me went, and I'm like, really? What the fuck did you think you were seeing? Also, how many other people have already died in this show prior to this happening?
There are literally 6 dead bodies on stage, bitch. And you thought they were going to kill Groban?
Right. The guy who's been murdering everyone through this entire show, you think that there isn't going to be like a redemption to get rid of him too?
In a show where the literal poster, the artwork is nothing just but blood everywhere. I will say there was also reports of, oh, there's no blood. I'm like, the night I saw it, there was blood. It wasn't extraordinary amounts of blood, but I've never seen a production of Sweeney where it was extraordinary amounts of blood.
I've seen some that have had way more than this one, but I saw blood the night
I didn't like that they did Pirelli's death in silhouette. I thought that was a fucking cop out.
I was also bummed. I know it's like a piece of stage business that's like doesn't have to be part of the script, but I was also bummed that we didn't do Pirelli's hand trapped in the trunk.
I know. Well, that's the moment.
It adds tension to that scene.
It's tension for sure. It's absolute tension. I know this was the least tense Sweeney I've ever seen. I'm also just, I'm bitter because I'm seeing certain people I know who have been so nitpicky about so many shows in the last like 2 years. Just call this production exceptional and wonderful. And I'm like, this show fails on a multiple amount of levels. Like, does it some things quite well? Does other things perfectly pleasantly? And I also don't want to make it seem like I hated this production. I didn't. This production is fine. But the fact that it's just fine kind of pisses me off. Especially because the Barrow Street production I thought was so fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on. Let's get into some more
categories. Wait, are we doing next show or are we doing another category?
Well, the only other show I can really talk about. Oh, I can talk about two shows. I hinted at Bad Cinderella in the last episode. I since have also seen Fat Ham, and I've now seen Life of Pi. Both will get nominated for play. Both, I think, will probably get nominated for lead actor. I don't think Life of Pi should get nominated for play. I think it's trying to be Warhorse-esque, but it's not. Like, Warhorse was a pretty okay script given an exceptional production. This is, in my opinion, a bad script given a pretty okay production. Mm-hmm. The puppets are cute. They're not the most inventive, but every now and then they work quite nicely. The lighting design is beautiful. The sound design and the score are lovely. The way they use the set is pretty cool, especially if we're including projections, which we do now. So, you know, here we are. And the lead actor was good. There was some acting in that cast, though, that was pretty piss poor. And speaking of accents, different accents abound. Different accents abound. Some were American, some were Indian, some were, you know, whatever. Dialects coach, anyone, please, for $1. Have you seen Fat Ham at all? Do you have any intention
to? No, I would like to very much, but I haven't seen it yet.
I will say, for anyone who's on the fence about it, it's way more fun than you think it's going to be. And
I've heard it's great.
It's really good. I was a little confused by the ending. I think I understand it better now, but okay. I still don't know if I love it, but endings are hard to land sometimes with plays, as we all know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it is a really strong ensemble. It's very funny. You don't have to know Hamlet to enjoy it, but if you do know Hamlet decently, even just decently, you'll like it. And there are a couple of acting nominations I think it could get. I think lead actor for sure. I think featured actor for the actor who plays the uncle and the dad. I'm forgetting his name, but oh boy, was I thirsting for him. I think he could absolutely get it. And I think the actress who plays the mom is so great and she could get in.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Let's pick a category. New category to talk about.
A new category? I thought we were just doing show by show.
We were doing show by show, but now we're just going to do categories.
All right, great. So, well, should we start from, I don't want to say the bottom. What's a good place to start? Should we go into start with like technical stuff that we can like fly through?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I don't have a lot of opinion on this. You've seen more than I have in terms of like, do you want, we've already mentioned a couple sound design things, not Sweeney Todd for you. Yeah,
I think if we're talking sound design of a musical, Parade, Kimberly, Shucked, from what I
Sound
hear.
Like It Hot?
Sound Like It Hot, maybe. And I hear Camelot. I think those would probably be the five.
Okay. That makes sense.
Unless on some random occasion they decide K-pop because of like the stadium sound that they give that show, but I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
I think everyone's already forgotten about K-pop.
Well, don't say never just yet because we've got some categories where it could sneak into. Sound design of a play, Christmas Carol, Life of Pi, probably Leopoldstadt. Fat Ham actually, I think, will get a sound design nomination. They do a lot of stuff with the karaoke machine where they go back and forth.
Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between different sounds, and I think that'll help it a lot. And then I don't know the fifth one. Maybe Prima Facie. I don't know that much about it, but it looks like they do a lot of stuff with sound design in that.
All right.
Considering it's a one-woman show. Now, more technical stuff. Go up to lighting now.
Sure, lighting design. Musical.
Lighting design of a musical. Parade, Sweeney. Kimberly, maybe. And Juliet, maybe.
Oh, and Juliet, maybe. I feel like nowadays, well, but I was going to say nowadays people just pick things that have, you know, lots of lighting cues. But I guess that's not totally true because it is people who are in that field doing the nominating for those categories still, isn't it?
We'll see. At the nomination committee, they try to have it be diverse of everyone of different fields.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's the Oscars where below the line categories, only people in that field can vote.
Got it.
It's still a nominating committee, but I do know that the nominating committee does have, I believe they have like one big meeting before everybody votes where they kind of sort of talk about the season. And I think that helps sometimes with design categories where like a lighting designer can say like, no, here's why you need to understand like these three shows actually did really clever lighting because of X, Y, Z. And whether that makes an impact on everyone else, who's to say, but it's like, mm-hmm. If you're a producer and you don't understand like that, what so-and-so did here is actually really incredibly impressive. Same thing with sound design. You know, there are certain things that when you're in the theater, you can go, oh, wow, that was really impressive. But also, if you're not, I feel like also if you're not thinking about the sound design, that means it's doing it really well, especially for a musical. If you can hear the orchestra well, if you can understand every word, that sound designer deserves a nomination. Yeah. It's when you're going, what did Emily say? Where's the band here? Yeah. I think Kimberly's vulnerable in a lot of design categories because it's a slightly more modern show and the most elaborate design. But I do think it's got sound, a chance at sound. I think it'll get orchestrations because it'll get nominated for score, and that there are basically three ways to get nominated for best orchestrations. You are tied to a best score nominee. You are a jukebox musical doing something very new.
Oh, with all new arrangements and things. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Girl from the North Country or MJ, which that got an orchestration nomination. Or you are the revivalist revival and you are doing brand spanking new orchestrations for a score everybody knows, which at the moment, the only contender for that would be 1776. I'm not sure if Parade is eligible yet because
I don't know that it is, because did it win the first time around, or was orchestration not a part of the Tony Awards at that point?
No, it was, because I think the first show to win orchestrations was Titanic. So Parade
the year
was,
before.
Yes. So Fosse won orchestrations over Parade that year. I think we have X number of musicians and we're making them, you know, deal with all these different sounding shows, and isn't that fluid?
Sure.
It'll be interesting to me, not because the last time the orchestrations didn't win, but because it's technically based off of the original orchestrations, but JRB has repurposed it for a smaller size, I think only by three pieces, but still that's not technically the same charts.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. We'll know. We'll see if that's eligible.
If it's eligible, it'll get in. If it's not, Les Mis Gay.
Yeah.
But lighting.
Lighting. So you said Sweeney,
Parade, Kimberly, and Juliet, and then
I would say maybe Some Like It Hot. Actually,
probably Some Like It Hot. Yeah. Unless they decide to be super kind to Danson, which doesn't have good lighting, but it does have a lot of it.
Well, then that could very well be the case.
It could be. Well, listen, there's a world in which Danson weirdly gets three nominations or gets zero. Who knows? Lighting design of a play, Life of Pi, Christmas Carol, Leopoldstadt, probably Death of a Salesman. And then, see, this is where I still need to see like three more. I feel like there's talk of Prima Facie, or, you know, people could talk about Ohio State Murders because that show is actually weirdly overly designed. But I feel like Ohio State Murders is just going to get Audra and be thankful for it. The Collaboration, was there lighting to remember in Collaboration?
No, it was pretty straightforward.
Okay. Oh, you know what? What might get a sound design nomination for a play is Peter Pan Goes Wrong. And when you see it, you'll understand.
Gotcha.
Yeah. They do a lot of jokes with sound cues in that show, so that
makes
help
sense.
Yeah, I also think they'll get a set design nomination, which they got for Play That Goes Wrong, and they could possibly get a costume design nomination for all those, you know, Lost Boys and Hook and all the quick changes that what's her face Nancy Zammit has to do. It's quite fun.
So then you just did lighting design of a play.
Yes.
Okay, then set design of a musical.
Okay. Set design of a musical. Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Camelot.
Yeah. Do you think Sweeney, just because of the size of it? Or do you think that they're going to go, it's too simple?
I'm really trying to think of like original musicals that could take its place. And there are other, New York.
Shucked, I think. We keep forgetting about New York, New York.
You do. And I keep hearing good things about it, so it's surprising.
Yeah, I do too. Sorry, New York, New York. You're totally on my radar. I just completely forgot. I would bet that they're gonna end up getting nominated for all of the technical categories.
Oh yeah, they're gonna get choreography nomination, set, costumes, possibly lighting, orchestrations for sure, possibly sound,
right?
And then probably musical.
Yeah.
Whether they get a best book nomination depends on how people feel about Camelot and if we're finally ready to give Aaron Sorkin a Tony nomination.
Are they going to consider him eligible for it?
I think they're. He's. I believe he's the only one credited for the book in this revival. So this could be a Douglas Carter Bean situation where.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. We'll see. Huh. We'll see. I have a feeling at least half of the book in Camelot right now is Sorkin.
Honestly, I wouldn't know the difference either way. Although, I mean, maybe his dialogue is very specifically Sorkin, but like, I don't know Camelot at all. So
yeah. Yeah.
That's not true. I know a couple of songs, but I don't know the show itself.
Yeah, it's a lovely score. But anywho, we'll see. Nice. We'll see. We'll see. But so yeah, set design. Okay, so if you think Shucked is gonna, okay.
Well, we said New York, New York also.
Yes, it's New York, New York, Some Like It Hot, Camelot. It's three. So there's Shucked.
And Juliet might get a set design nomination.
It could. I don't love
there's that. I know, but there's a turntable.
Yeah, we love turntables. I'm in the minority of people that really like the Kimberly set. I think that it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It sets the tone. It has a couple of surprises in it. If it's not the most like clever of sets or like the most overly designed of sets, I think it does exactly what it's supposed to do and could sneak in there in the same way that Bob Crowley accidentally won set design for Once, you know?
Right.
Not accidentally, but like no one saw that coming, or like when whoever won for The Ferryman won for The Ferryman.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing where it's like, it's not the most elaborate of sets, but sometimes that's, if it fits the piece really well, that can really hit with nominators and voters. Yeah.
Scene design of a play?
Scene design of play. Life of Pi, Lea Pohlstedt, Christmas Carol. I had two others. Oh, I mentioned a collaboration, but you said maybe no. Fathom could get in there weirdly. It's not... It has one major surprise towards the end, but also they do a lot of fun things with the entrances for Juicy's dad when he's the ghost and he enters the stage. He has a couple of really creative entrances, and that could do it for them. Or Ain't No Mo maybe for set design.
excuse me. Or, oh God, I literally just had another one in my mind. Piano Lesson.
God, I hope not. I thought that set ruined it, but they could
win for the piano.
I will say that the piano itself was actually wonderfully designed.
It was beautiful. Aren't they putting it in a museum?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's a piano. It's scarier than anything in Sweeney Todd, but that, I mean, the house for Piano Lesson I thought was all wrong. It's very designy, but the whole point of the ghosts in Piano Lesson is that you're not sure if they're real or not until the last 5 minutes. Right. And the moment that curtain comes up, you go, oh, that's a haunted house.
Ooh.
Ooh. Spooky.
Welcome, foolish mortals. Yeah.
Mm. It's like Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. Spooky, scary. Costume design of a musical.
I'll be shocked if Greg Barnes didn't get a nomination for Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
I feel like Greg Barnes is always kind of a shoo-in. I would guess New York, New York costumes will get nominated just because it's a period piece.
Yeah.
Period. Who's doing those?
That's a great question. Who does the costumes for Aunt Juliet? Because I feel like that'll get in too.
It's gotta be a UK designer.
Donna Zakowska.
Is Aunt Juliet?
It is New York, New York.
Oh, I don't know that person.
They did the costume designs for the play, relatively speaking. So, congrats.
All right. I mean, moving on up.
And the costumes for Aunt Juliet are by Paloma Young. She'll get nominated.
Oh.
We like Paloma.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So yeah, I think, and Juliet, Some Like It Hot, New York, New York, Camelot, and then the fifth one, Sweeney or Parade probably. And I would probably give it to Parade if they're not as immediately impressive as Sweeney Todd. They're far more appropriate. Unless everyone did a line of Coke and said, you know what had a lot of color? Bad Cinderella.
I mean, I have not seen it. I have seen photos of some of those costumes, and some of them are very beautiful.
Which ones?
You are like full shading me right now. I think that the ball gowns, a lot of the ball gowns are really pretty.
Okay. I will say, having seen the show, having seen that girl, which, by the way, for anyone who has read my beautiful review, is not the garbage disaster that the reviews would have you make it out to be. It is not good. It's not even mediocre. It's just bad. It just sits there being bad, and you go, at the very least, Andy, make a bold decision so I can sit here and call it camp. You don't even do that.
Yeah, there's nothing more disappointing than when a bad musical is just boring.
So fucking boring. There are a handful of moments where it is camp, but they are not often enough. And honestly, it feels more like Grace McLean and Carolee Carmello are turning to the audience being like, isn't this just like Pink Flamingos? And we're sitting there being like, you've never seen Pink Flamingos. You've heard about it. You've never seen it. And I love both of those women dearly.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They're trying so hard to make that show come alive. And it's just a losing battle. Losing battle. They could get a costume design nomination. Diana got one, and that girl was in a refrigerator box at the end of Act One. So here we are.
So there you go.
And nominated for a semi-canceled William Ivy Long at the time. So
that's right.
Sometimes we do what we do.
And you still get a Tony nomination.
I would give Kimberly Akimbo a costume nomination for the candy necklace alone, but here we are. But I know some people are mad that the show choir doesn't have a tearaway costume at the end. So maybe that'll do them in.
Oh, Lord.
Well, after okay. They talk so much about how they want to raise money so they can get tearaway costumes. And then in the end, they don't even have tearaway costumes.
Sure.
I'm like, I'm sorry. In Great Adventure, the last thing I want is a reveal. I'm just going to sit there crying. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Unless they did a costume reveal like at the curtain call.
Yeah. It's like Eliza doing a cooter slam in the middle of Burn, you know? It's like, I love it, but not necessary right now.
I need to see that.
You forfeit all rights to my heart. When she does that, she'll,
yeah,
you forfeit all rights to my slam.
Uh-huh.
And all the gays will just go, work, bitch, cunt. Anyway. All right. Costume design of a play. Fuck me. Leopold Stadt for the win. Christmas Carol, probably. Maybe Fat Ham for the very end, but we'll see. I'm trying to think what else is there. I know nothing about Thanksgiving play, other than apparently Katie Finneran is hysterical.
I've heard both of the women are very funny. I'm excited to go.
I've seen it in 2 weeks. I'm very excited. Doll's House is all contemporary costumes, isn't it? Or no?
From what I can tell, I haven't seen it yet. And it looks like everyone is in relatively either contemporary garb or like it's at least all black. Like there's not much defining about it.
Yeah.
And
Piano Lesson might get in there for costumes.
I was gonna say maybe Piano Lesson because it's a period piece.
Yeah. Ain't No Mo' probably because there's a lot of costumes in that show, and it goes all over the gamut in terms of time period and genre. So it could get in there.
Right.
I'm very interested to see what ends up happening with Ain't No Mo' with nominations because I feel like it could either get a surprisingly large number or almost get completely shut out.
I would have really liked to have seen that show. I'm bummed for them that it didn't do well.
Well, this is why you
decently.
This is why you don't get celebrities to produce your Broadway show. They know nothing about Broadway producing. Ain't No Mo was good. It was 15 minutes too long. Every sketch should have ended 5 minutes earlier, but it was pretty good. And Crystal Lucas Perry was great. It was overall a very strong cast, but I think Crystal has a good shot at a nomination in featured actress. Moving on up. We mentioned orchestrations a little bit. I think if we have five nominees and, you know, one of them isn't going to go to a score nominee, it's probably going to be N. Juliet for how they incorporate.
Oh, for their new arrangements of stuff. Yeah.
Kimberly Akimbo, Some Like It Hot, probably Shucked. And then number five, I don't know. What if it's a beautiful noise?
Who knows? It could be.
It could,
or to your point, isn't there a play that has music this season?
There are a couple of plays that could get nominated for score, but none of them have live orchestras, and that's the thing.
Okay,
I think you need
it has to be a li- it has to be live instrumentation.
I'm pretty sure.
Got it. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, Danson could get in there more on a technicality of just the fact of, you know, adapting all these different styles into new styles, because it's Fosse reinvented.
I was going to say, if Fosse won it last time, then maybe we'll see Danson get nominated with it again.
It could absolutely happen. Oh, wait. Do we say New York, New York? I don't think we said New York, New York.
No, probably New York, New York.
Yeah, there we go. That's our five. Our five orchestrations will mirror our five best musical nominees.
Spoiler. I will be sitting anticipating a banjo at any moment during that show, and I can't wait.
During New York, New York?
Yeah, because if it's a John Kander score and I don't hear a banjo at least once, I'll be very disappointed.
That's fair. But he doesn't have orchestrations.
I know, but his shows generally have a very recognizable sound to them.
Sure. Is there a banjo in Steel Pier? Probably.
Oh, yeah. You hear it ripping up during Everybody's Girl, during the key change.
Okay. Before I forget, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And we're back.
Oh my god, I took a nap.
I think this is the first time, Adam, with you being on the podcast. Granted, I've only been on a network for, you know, 6 months now. This is the first time I remembered to take a break when talking to you. I usually get so caught up. And granted, I took the break far too late in the episode, and I have to do one more before we close out. But here we are.
We'll probably need a pee break at some point anyway.
Yeah, with your bladder and age, you're going to need to pee at some point.
Mm-hmm. Always.
So,
always.
Director of a musical. Let's just get into her.
Okay. So, Susan Stroman.
You think?
I think so. I've heard that it's really slick.
Yeah.
What?
I've heard that it's wet and slippery and smooth. Okay, so let's look at the potentials. Or, like, the realistic potentials, I should say.
Yeah.
Of the originals, we have Jessica Stone for Kimberly.
She will get a nomination.
I think she will, too, because it's only Titanic in 1997 has there been a Best Musical winner not nominated for director. And if Kimberly is the front runner for Best Musical, and I truly believe it is, I still have to see New York, New York, but I've seen everything else. And I just based off of the reviews, based off of the commercial reception so far, and then the community reception. It feels like it's Kimberly.
And her direction is just so lovely. It's so nice.
I know people who were disappointed because it wasn't staged, quote unquote, inventively. I think her staging is perfectly fine. It doesn't call attention to itself, but also her work with the actors is so good.
That was going to be my point. I think that her work really shows in the scenes between those characters where you really got... But speaking of tension, there's this scene where they're at the revolving dinner table, and that scene is incredibly tense.
Yeah, that wasn't done off Broadway, the revolve. That was what they added for Broadway, which I was so glad they did. Yeah, that whole scene is done so well. And also, oh God, we'll talk about this with choreography. I wish that more people would pay attention to the choreography in Kimberly Akimbo, because it's very it's used sparingly, but when it's done so effectively, and it's mostly the show choir. But with how they are used framing the stage during the turn, we take the turn. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
So fantastic. It's like, that is for me is what musical theater is. It's a moment of tension, humor and tension that is presented to us through a simple revolve, that is direction, actors, also direction, music that is underscoring dissonance, and then the framing of the show choir kids doing very simple dance movements. I'm like, this is just fucking perfection. Ah, I love it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So Jessica Stone's going to get a nomination. We're saying it. It's happening.
Yeah, we're saying it. She's going to get nominated. I think Michael Arden is absolutely a lock for Parade and probably front runner.
Yeah.
As I said on Instagram, it is the revivaliest of all the revivals this season. And it's very much a director showcase. And this will be, I think, his third nomination, possibly fourth if he gets in for Christmas Carol. And we'll get to that in a second.
Mm.
And he could win for Parade. But I think Jessica Stone is still in there. I think Kale will probably get in because it's Sweeney and it's big and he's well-liked, which leaves us with two. Stro for New York, New York.
Yeah.
I think the other ones we have to consider, Luke Shepherd for And Juliet.
Mm.
Bart Scher for Camelot.
Oh, yeah. He's like one of those just for posterity nominations.
Yeah. He does a musical revival at Lincoln Center and they go, yeah, here you go. And yeah. he gets nominated more often than he does not. Same thing with Casey Nicholaw with Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
He gets nominated for director more often than he doesn't. And I think that's important to remember moving forward because the only other potential would be
Wayne Cilento. Lear.
No, Wayne Cilento's not getting nominated for dance and not one fucking bit.
Oh, I thought we were just naming directors. Sorry.
I misunderstood the assignment. No. Lear for Into the Woods would be the only other option. And I brought this up last week. I mentioned on Instagram today. I have a very hot take when it comes to this revival of Into the Woods and its Tony chances, which is that I really don't think it's going to do as well with nominations as people think. It closed a little too long ago. The original company that opened it left way earlier than we remember.
Right.
And even though it is on tour right now, there are revivals happening in New York right now that are making a much, just as big a splash as Into the Woods did over the summer, but they're also just, you know, they're here.
They're fresh in people's minds.
Parade, Sweeney, Camelot. Those are the three. And I'm not going to spill tea. I'm not going to spill tea, but I mentioned this on Insta a while ago and people asked me what I meant by this. And I said, I'm not telling you, but this is the thing with Lear is that she had a really, really shitty first season at Encores. It started off terribly. And that's not a secret. Everyone knows.
It was rough.
And Into the Woods happened and was good. And everyone breathed a sigh of relief. And then the narrative became, oh, this is the best Into the Woods that's ever been. Oh, it's brought the show back. I think that I have only been able to think of this revival as the production of Into the Woods that made people who didn't like it before like it because they don't do anything with it. They just did the show.
Right.
And surprise, surprise, Into the Woods is a good musical. But
whether or not you liked this revival,
mm-hmm.
and I liked it well enough, but it killed me every time someone would be like, it's the best production of Into the Woods I've ever seen. And I'm like, no, the best production of Into the Woods you've ever seen is the 1990 PBS Great Performances telecast. That's the best production of Into the Woods you've ever seen.
someone tried to pitch me that Bettina Miller found pathos in The Witch that Bernadette didn't, to which I said, are you absolutely fucking kidding me? If there's one thing Bernadette Peters can do, it's find pathos in literally anything. But and Bettina is not a pathos gal. She does not lead with that foot. But I did like Bettina. This is to say, this is sort of the tea that I'm going to hint at, is that even with Woods having done so well for them at the very end of that season, Lear has not been given a clean slate with her new season at Encores. her board of directors have pretty much told her she's not allowed to do what she wanted because what she wanted blew up so badly. And even though Woods came off well, they're like, this is not such a success that you get to start over again. We are telling you how you're going to do the seasons from now on. So right. That tells you a little bit about how she's thought of. And then there might be another musical she recently worked on that has not gone over well that she may or may not have been asked to leave from. So I do not think that the general communal vibe on Lear is all that strong, which is why even though she is technically a contender, I'm not going to put her name down.
Yes.
Sorry, that was a long way to get back to where we're getting to. I think Stroman is so much more well-liked and respected, and from what I understand, her work in New York, New York is very good. Casey is very well-liked and respected. I can see a world in which we have Arden, Stone, Kale, Stroh, and Nicola, or Bart gets in over Casey because right. Casey gets a choreography nomination.
And to your point before, it all so many times, more often than not, it does happen, but more often than not, it's all about what's fresh in people's minds and still running.
Yes. When you look at stuff, and we'll get to this with acting in a second, when you get to stuff that has closed, that has been nominated, you can't just look at it specifically as a statistic of like, well, it's happened before. It's like, okay, well, let's look at the season. So for example, when I said that I don't think Woods will get many acting nominations, if at all, I still am pretty confident Sarah will get in for leading actress. We'll get to her in a second. Mm-hmm. But I think she's actually more vulnerable than many people are willing to admit. And people go, well, Martin Short won for Little Me. I'm like, yes, there were four nominees in his category. He was one of three that were in closed shows. And the only one who was still running was Tom Wopat and Annie Get Your Gun. And it's not called Frank Butler Get Your Gun. It's called Annie Get Your Gun.
And right. And Martin Short had made a great impression in that role.
That role in Little Me is such a showcase. And he mm-hmm. was considered so great in it that it just wasn't not going to happen. Like the only other option was Brent Carver, who was also in a close show. Cara Lee probably would have won for Parade if Parade were still running at the time, but she lost to Bernadette in the currently running Annie Get Your Gun, where everyone went, she's not as bad as I thought she was going to be. So, okay, of the five directors that I said, we said Kale, Stone, Arden, Stroh, Nicola.
Mm-hmm.
Who, Cher. If you had to kick one out, who would it be?
Which queen deserves to go home and why?
Where's six?
I might have to say Thomas Kale.
Interesting. That's who I would personally take out. I don't know if I believe that's who will get taken.
I mean, I thought you were asking my personal opinion.
Oh,
I don't.
Oh, personal is easy. I can absolutely give you who my personal five are.
I don't know. Especially because I haven't seen everything, it's a hard one for me to really have a full opinion on, but based on what I have seen, I think is this in order to get Cher in?
Or
before considering that
Cher the one that gets kicked out, or is it
maybe it might be.
Yeah, I think this could be a revival like Fiddler where Cher is vulnerable again.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that with Fiddler, the reviews were kind, but they weren't extraordinary. And a lot of people were like, we know that this show is extraordinary. The fact that I'm not like living my best life is your fault.
Right.
Camelot, if Camelot gets kind reviews, no one's going to necessarily blame him for it not being over the moon incredible. They're like, well, it's Camelot. It's never been great.
Right. I was going to say I don't think I've ever had anybody list that as like their top favorite show of all time.
JFK, and he's dead. So.
Well.
That's why he got killed.
If he was still alive, do you think that would still be his favorite musical? Let's be real.
Yeah, no, he probably would like Lacage next.
Yes.
All that butt stuff. He's like, yes, please. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can put up your country's butt. So, director of a play. Once again, we go into most. This is a category where it's very easy to line up those who did like a lot of elaborate staging in a play. So Life of Pi, Christmas Carol, speaking of turntables, Leopoldstadt, and then probably Death of a Salesman, probably, I don't know, maybe I would give Fat Ham a nomination here. I think that they do a really good job with this, but yeah, I don't know. What's the word on the street? Who's talking about director of a play, Adam?
I haven't heard anybody talking about director of a play.
It's such a shame. There's actually been some pretty good direction. Some pretty good direction this year. Like, I thought that Kenny Leon's direction for Top Dog Underdog was really strong.
Mm. That's true. I could see him getting a nomination for that.
Yeah. Well, again, just because that show closed and there's so much fucking going on. And yeah. Like, even Peter Pan goes wrong. It's got so much happening on that stage that you can't deny the...
It's a traffic control job.
Yeah, but like a good one. One that doesn't feel traffic control. And I hear Chafkin's doing some really funny work and complex work in Thanksgiving play. So who knows?
I think that's one that's going to be hard to tell until everything is open.
Yeah. And unlike the musicals... Actually, no, that's not true, because we have some plays this season that also would have been eligible in past seasons for, like, Drama Desks and Outer Critic Circle. So, like, between Riverside and Crazy and Cost of Living and Fat Ham, it's like, well, what should we nominate them for? Or rather, we should say, like, what's the momentum on these shows? Because they were off-Broadway last season or previous seasons. And
right.
It's harder to tell. But, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I hope LaTanya doesn't get nominated for Piano Lesson. I really didn't like her direction on that show one bit. The tone and the staging. Sorry to be a downer. I'm also fascinated to see if anything happens with Cost of Living, a full-on Pulitzer winner that got, like, the biggest of rave reviews from the Times, once again, throwing out critics' picks like candy, which I liked, didn't love, but I don't know, at the time I was like, oh, I'm sure, like, play... possibly direction, maybe an acting nomination or two. And now it's like not on anyone's top five for any category.
I know, it's interesting though that I haven't seen it really brought up at all this season, but yeah, when it opened, well, and obviously it won the Pulitzer before and all of that, but it's surprising that it seems to have gone by the wayside.
I wonder, has there ever been a play that has won the Pulitzer that didn't get nominated for best play if it was eligible, you know?
Mm.
I don't know if that's ever happened.
I want to do a follow-up on that one. I don't know. Yeah, not that I can think of, but my awareness of that type of stuff isn't quite as strong as my musical knowledge.
Well, and that's why originally I thought that the five best plays... And then we'll get to it. Okay. So direction, we're done. Choreography. Stroh, obviously.
Yeah.
Nicola, obviously. I would probably say and Juliet, because those people dance on the turntable and they don't bump into each other.
Sure.
Yeah. There was a question in the last episode about Salento's eligibility for dancing, because even though it's technically Fosse's moves, he is quote-unquote reinventing it.
Wait, now remind me, for Fosse, did anybody get nominated for choreography for that show? Was that an in-ranking nomination?
No. They were nominated for direction.
Okay. Oh, right. It was Anne and I can't remember who co-director was.
Richard Mulpey Jr.
Richard Mulpey Jr., that's right.
And then Gwen Verdon was like artistic consultant.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? Choreograph, blah, 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 blah.
Well, so friend of the pod, Robbie Rizel, wanted to remind me that Anne won her choreography Tony for Chicago in the style of Fosse.
Right.
Which there are at least two numbers in Chicago when it's done with a full cast of dancers that are purely Fosse's original moves, but I would argue that the majority of that show is Anne's work.
It's her, yeah.
Even if we're going off of, you know, Hot Honey Rag being 99% Fosse, you know, everything else she does, even she might be following a similar structure, but the moves themselves are hers. Whereas dancing, we are, even when Salento's like, hey, let's take this section and put it over here and have put everyone at an angle, I'm like, yes, but they're at an angle still doing Fosse's moves.
Right.
Yes.
You just change the direction of it.
Yes, you may, as I said...
The physical direction of it, I should say.
Yeah, as I said in last week's episode, you might be dancing to Plastic Chicken, but they are still doing the exact moves of Mine Hair. Even if they were eligible for choreography, I could not in good conscience give them a nomination for that when the two highlights are Sing 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 and Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar, when just doing the exact moves.
I think that's valid. Oh, God, what else? God, choreography. Mm,
Yeah.
Maybe they won't fill all five categories, although they probably will want to, just because there's enough shows to make it happen.
Well, and that's the thing I wonder, like, could it be a situation where it ends up being four? Because I think that can happen too. If it's sort of scattered enough with the fifth nominee, where it's like, you know, 10 people do K-pop, 10 people do...
I could see a world in which Shucked gets nominated, even though I don't think it would have a chance of winning, but it has a couple of like creatively fun numbers. There's that one barrel number that's the staging of it is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's late in act two. I would argue if Shucked is allowed to be a hot contender for a nomination, then so should fucking Kimberly. I know people are going to mention Sweeney, and it's entirely possible there is movement in that show, but I do not think it's effective. Best case scenario, it just is fine. Like in God, That's Good, it's done okay. Worst case scenario, it fully undercuts the tension of the show. I really hated how the movement was done in the ballad of them being like...
When they start like humping the air and doing that body roll.
Yep, the sweetie, da 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 da. I hated it. And then they do like a blob thing where people would like pop out of the blob to do their solo bits. And
it's right.
I'm not opposed to movement in Sweeney. I think that it can work. I was like, poor thing, a number where you absolutely could have movement here.
Yeah, I thought that I totally forgot about that. Yes, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that number could have been much more exciting.
I'm going to have to ask. Maybe I won't ask Delaney because I don't want to come back here with an answer and everyone know that it's Delaney I asked. I'll ask around to other people I know who are in that show. But it honestly, this whole production just felt to me sort of like, we don't want to be triggering to anyone. So there's no whistle. There's not a lot of blood. And when the judge assaults Lucy at the party in pantomime, he's going to be 4 feet away from her while he does it. Because I don't know if you remember the way that it ended. He's standing 3 feet from her and he sort of takes out his hand and starts pointing his finger down like he's going to enter her cleavage. It's on that final, like, poor thing.
Oh, I totally even missed that. I didn't even see it.
It's what it looked like to me. Granted, it was...
Which is a problem because you should be fully paying attention to that moment.
Absolutely. But I just remember he was like pointing his finger down, getting closer towards her and closer towards her. And then when they got to that final, he like whisked her off. And I was just like, no, come on, you got to do something here.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman fully fell on top of Laura Michelle Kelly. We only saw it for a second, but he did it.
Yeah. In the original production, we got like the bare judge butt.
Yep. And then in the concert with George Hearn and Patty, they had Lucy slide down the middle of the gangplank towards the judge.
Oh, that's right.
That was cute. I don't know. I know people don't love the movie and I defend it to everyone, but I think there's one number in that movie that I'm like, I'm sorry, it doesn't need my defense. They just do it so well. And it's Poor Thing. They do Poor Thing so fucking well.
It's great. It looks great.
The way that the Timothy Spall as the Beatle just looks on with like admiration.
He is in like full wormtail mode too.
Oh yeah. Fully erect. He's fully erect. His wormtail is erect in that.
Yeah.
God, I love it. But yeah, they could get in for choreography. I hope not. I don't. And I love Hoggett. I think his work in Once.
I do too.
An American Idiot. But just, this is not it. She's not the one here.
And even his stuff in Cursed Child is really fun and cool. You better swing that goddamn cape around. Let's swoosh it.
When they said that there was wand dancing, it's not what I expected, but I'm glad I saw it.
I just remember when I had a friend that saw it in the West End before it came here, and he was like, there's a lot of swooshing of capes. And the funny thing was that when I finally saw it, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be, but to the point where it made me giggle a little bit every time, because I was like, ooh, there they go, like, whoosh, they're just swooshing around. Because also there's that sound effect that goes along with it that's very much a swoosh.
Oh, it's a swoosh. So... Book and score is where it gets a little tricky because we have our three locks.
Yeah.
Score, we have a lock in Kimberly, which also, by the way, everyone listen to the cast recording because that cast recording came out at the right moment for Tony.
It sounds incredible.
And it gives you even greater insight to how fucking great that score is.
Yeah.
Look at Hot, Shucked. Those are three locks for score. And I think
New York, New York, because it's going to be, because it's John Kander's potentially final show.
Is it eligible?
Yeah.
It is?
There's enough new material in it that it's eligible.
Do you know that for sure?
I'm pretty darn sure. Because they're doing what? New York, New York, World Goes Round.
Marry Me.
Marry Me. I think there's like maybe four or five trunk songs, quote unquote, reused songs. And I think the rest of it is original. But I could be wrong.
If you're correct, it's absolutely going to get a score nomination. Absolutely. Won't win, but will get nominated. Every time that Kander and Ebb get nominated in this century, they nominate it on the grounds of vote for us. You'll never get the chance to vote for John Kander again.
Right.
And then each time he doesn't win, and then he gets
nominated. He's like, oh, wait, there's this other show that John and I wrote, or that Fred and I wrote that we never got out. Here, let's do this one now.
Yeah, here you go. Vote for me now, bitches.
Yeah, it was like Steel Pier was the last show, and then The Visit was Curtains was the last show, and then The Visit was the last show, and then Scottsboro Boys,
then The
well,
Visit.
Well, whatever order it was. The number of times that I've been like, oh, it's the last time I'll get to see an original Kander and Ebb musical on stage. And it's like, oh, wait, 5 years have passed, and here's another one. Here we are again.
Yep. And every time when the Tonys come around, the producers are like, vote for it for score. You'll never get the chance again. And everyone's like, I have a feeling there are three other shows somewhere in their basement.
I have a feeling.
John Kander's holding out on us. So if it's eligible, absolutely. And then the fifth slot. So I also thought if it's not eligible and they have to do two more slots, I think Life of Pi will get in there as a play with music.
Oh, for a score nomination. Yeah.
And it is beautiful music that is very heavily used in the show. And then if New York, New York is not eligible and we have Life of Pi in there, then it's okay. K-pop, Almost Famous, Bad Cinderella, which do we do? And
What if they just do four?
What if they do four? Or, well, that's the thing is, because then there are plays that also have music that they can nominate.
Sure.
Because it's really rare when it's okay, we have enough for five slots, but actually we only nominated four. But like that happens extremely rarely. I feel like if they're gonna do a fifth and they have to fill it out, they would do K-pop for multiple reasons. But I don't know, what if they did do Bad Cindy? Ugh, God.
I don't see the theater community awarding that show with many nominations just out of sheer whatever.
Disdain. There's a lot of disdain for that show.
Yeah.
Which I get, and again,
it's been the butt of a joke since before it came in. Like, when they announced that it was coming over, people are like, why?
And why change it to that name? The thing is that I feel like a lot of the vitriol on that show, it's not that it's undeserved, it's just a little too intense. I'm like, can we release some of the poison here and sprinkle it onto some other shows that maybe don't deserve tens, tens, tens across the board?
Yes. That, I have to say, side note, that when they revealed that title...
With her
doing the spray paint. And I really think that they thought they were being brilliant about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it definitely got my attention, but it was just like, why are you picking this name for this show? It's just... Oi. Anyway.
So the intel I have on Bad Cinderella is similar to the intel I have on Diana, which is that when it was being created, it was never, ever meant to be camp. It was meant to be earnest, fun and entertaining, but earnest. And then when the show got its reception on the West End, Andy was like, oh great, I did it so well. And then the Post came, tore it to shreds, and they went, okay, we have like one angle here, and it is camp. And the writing does not endorse that. That's just what the marketing went for. And the cast of Bad Cinderella, they are all very aware what show they are in and what kind of show they are in. But everyone on the production team is convinced that they were creating something of merit. And so that is sort of why there's a lot of, I think, disdain for the show itself. Because it's like, if you came out as a rowdy bowdy bitch, as Alyssa Edwards says, we would have more respect for you. Same thing, like if Diana had come out the gate in 2020 before the pandemic, being like, we're trying to do like a camp-tastic spectacular of Diana. You can call it in poor taste, but this is what we're going with. Yeah. And then it wasn't until Netflix happened. And then honestly, halfway into previews after Netflix, they were like, oh, let's pivot. Say this is what we always wanted to do.
Yeah, because even by the time that I saw it, which was maybe 3 weeks before it closed, I don't think it had officially opened yet. I don't remember.
They ran.
When did they open? Do you remember their opening night?
Their opening night, I think, was end of November. They opened for legit 4 weeks total.
Okay, then I think I saw it right before it opened, because I think I saw it mid-November. Okay. I want to say it was like the 12th or something. Anyway, but even, because even at that point, that audience was so divided and confused.
Yep.
And having a good time, but not for the reasons that the creative team wanted you to have a good time. And it was like the beginning of the big switch over.
Yeah. It's the same thing with Bad Cinderella. Like, everyone's going in saying, screw the critics, I'm gonna have wine and have an amazing time. And that is sort of how the show begins. And then it tries to trick you into thinking that there's a deeper message, but they can't, so they go back to camp. Bad Cindy herself has got a number in Act Two called Far Too Late that goes on for, let me check my watch here, 7,342 minutes. It is one of the longest, most repetitive songs I've ever heard, to the point where a bunch of us in the orchestra started chuckling every time a new verse happened, because we're just saying the same thing over and over again. And the irony is that the song is called Far Too Late to Sing a Love Song. And I went, oh, great. I'm so glad that we are 3/4 of the way into Act Two for you to say this via a 7-minute number.
Oh my God.
Stupid. Not Linady's fault, just whatever. I hope it doesn't get a Best Score nomination. It could, just on the merit of, like, it's Andy Weber, you know, he brought us a show, guys, and we shouldn't be too harsh on it. But, like, I think that there's also something to say about K-pop, where it would be nice to nominate the first Asian American woman for Best Score.
Mm.
Score of K-pop sounds like K-pop. And they are releasing the cast recording in pieces leading up to nomination day, so they can hear it separate from the show, which is the Women on the Verge narrative. And I think that is very smart. So
that is smart. Well, yeah. then I hope the best for them.
As do I. As opposed to Almost Famous, where you go, I just want this to be Tiny Dancer. And then you listen to Tiny Dancer and you're like, yeah, why can't the rest of the score be this way? Yeah. Neither will be nominated for Book, which leads us to Book. Kimberly, Shooked, Some Like It Hot, and Juliet, and then either New York, New York, or if Sorkin is considered eligible for Camel Toe, possibly Sorkin for Camel Toe.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it'll probably be New York, New York, unless Sorkin's eligible.
I mean, if they can't get New York, New York down to 2 hours and 30 minutes, I don't know.
What's it running now, 2:45?
I don't know.
Because the first preview was like 3 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first preview was 3 hours. Supposedly they were able to shave off like 5 minutes in the first week. Okay. I don't know where it's at now. They might be doing the shuffle along situation where it's like the first week was just about kind of tightening what they had, and then second week was okay, now let's do
get the axe. Yeah.
Oh god, every Broadway show needs George C. Wolfe to come in and be like, okay, you get cut, you get cut, you get cut, sorry babe, I love you, you're talented, but you're fired because you have no part anymore. We need him. We need him every day of every week. I am so glad that Broadway listened to me and gave me Joe Mantello with The Grey House, but I need Wolf now too.
Oh right, wait, you didn't mention that in the shows that are still yet to open.
Well, because it doesn't
open. Oh, it's next season technically, isn't it?
Yeah, it starts previews I think at the end of this month and then opens in May, or maybe it previews in May and opens in June. I just remember, like, they announced that their preview started so soon after the cutoff date that everyone was like,
why
not just do this season? But right. I think it's pretty packed, and you know, I don't think they're aiming for Tonys. I think they're just aiming to make some money.
Yeah. Well, and maybe their show will be thrilling.
Maybe.
And scary.
God damn, do we need it. Imagine if Laurie Metcalf could sing. Imagine her love it.
Oh my God. Oh, it would be incredible. It would be incredible.
It would be absolutely.
It would also be unhinged.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and I'm saying this in the best way possible, but oh man, would that be an unhinged Mrs. Lovett?
It's going to be really hard for me to deal with for a while in my first world beautiful gay problem. Is when Once Upon a One More Time opens at the Marquee Theater with Jennifer Simard, and I'm going to be like, Sweeney Todd is right across the street, Jennifer Simard. Why aren't you there doing Lovett? Why aren't you my Mrs. Lovett?
She'd be amazing.
When has she not been amazing?
That's true.
I don't mean to be like that person who's like, I love you no matter what you do. I'm sure she could do something that would make me unhappy. But so far, I've yet to be disappointed in Samard.
Cinnamon.
The odd taste in the coffee is cinnamon, Bobby.
Manicotti.
Well, okay. So speaking of her too, watching Shucked, I was just had like a bit of deja vu at the Nederlander Theater with everyone talking about Alex Newell and their number. And I'm like, okay, Alex absolutely sings the house down. And I'm sitting here going, let's not pretend this is Jennifer Samard making an absolute meal out of the jukebox number in Disaster.
Right.
Just doing, first of all, also singing her goddamn tits off in a number that truly builds, that, you know, excites you in the end.
It was incredible.
You're doing absolutely everything humanly possible you could do with a jukebox machine. It was, not jukebox, slot machine, sorry. It was, oh God, like that, I just sat there being like, I'll remember that forever. And an audience losing it because they were so surprised. And Newell, I was like, Newell's doing great, but this is not like the same kind of surprise for me. Anywho. Okay, let's get into some acting. Pick a category, any category.
Let's do what they always do. Best supporting actress of a musical.
You mean featured actress in a musical?
I'm sorry, best featured actress in a musical. That's right.
Let's call it like we see it. Well, let's start with our first lock, shall we?
Bonnie Milligan.
Yes, 1,000%.
Duh.
Duh. Then if we have Alex, we have Alex. After having seen Kim again for, you know, a few time, I gotta say, I think Ali Mazi could get in there.
Ali Mazi could also be in there. It could be a twofer with both of them.
Yeah. And she's not such competition for Bonnie that they would split votes. I just think that there's a way to, you know, I think she's giving a performance that should absolutely be acknowledged. And it's a really difficult role that she pulls off.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. I mean, for like a sort of showier role, there's Natasha Yvette Williams from
Some Like It Hot.
And she really is quite good in that show. She's really enjoyable.
She's someone who on paper, I keep saying, like, is a possibility. But then when I really think about it realistically, I don't see it. But it could happen. Her show is still running. This is another situation, Adam, where people were like, well, what about Pippa in Into the Woods? What about Julia Lester? And I'm like, yes, what about them? Right. There are so many options. And all the women who are also options are still on Broadway.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. If I'm going to nominate anyone in featured actress from Into the Woods, it's Julia Lester. But
oh yeah, she was great.
She was. I just don't see it happening. I would nominate Melanie LaBere, I think is her name, from And Juliet, Melanie LaBere, the nurse.
Oh, the one who won the Olivier as the nurse. Yeah. She's great.
Did she win, or did the actress who played Anne Hathaway win on the West End?
I think she won. Although I could be wrong.
Melanie
maybe she was nominated and didn't win.
Well, and so you and I have very similar opinions on this musical, Adam.
Yes.
Yes. And I need the listeners to understand just how gay we are when we talk about how much we both kind of saw Juliet and went, okay.
Yeah. It was one of those shows. It's very rare that I feel bad that I don't like something very much. Sure. But it was one where I was like, I really should like this show. There's so many elements of that show that I really, on paper, was excited about. Where I was like, oh, fun. Like, it's a very diverse cast across the board. Not even, like, racially. Like, body type. Gender. Everything. It's a really inclusive cast. Probably the most inclusive cast I've seen on a Broadway stage in a minute.
Absolutely.
The design is fun and bright, and it's all like late 90s, early 2000 bops. And so, like, you know, it's totally my era of pop music in terms of, at least, it just reminds me of like the end of high school.
Half of the music in And Juliet was the music that was playing when you lost your virginity at prom, you know?
Right.
Early Britney, late shit.
Yeah. But you've made your point about it, and I don't, and I kind of agree. It's where it's like, you know, the show is about this character, and she's the least interesting part of the show.
Absolutely, the least interesting.
And it's another one of those ones where I feel like there's a lot being shoehorned in that's unnecessary.
Yeah. If there's nothing
just for visibility's sake, where it's like, just by a lot of these, and I mean, no disrespect to any of these actors. I'm thrilled to see this diversity on stage, but there's a lot of stuff that feels shoehorned in just in the name of visibility.
Yeah, well, it's performative in the way that, honestly, a lot of Broadway is, you know, and the community is. And I've talked about this a bit in the past, and I wish that we'd have a bit more of a reckoning about it, or just, like, being honest and getting a little dirtier about it. The best way I can describe it, and it's a play I don't like. I don't think it's a good play, but I like how it ends, which is Slave Play, where Jacquina and Paul Alexander Nolan, you know, the whole bit is their marriage is sort of based on this toxic truth of the history of slavery in America.
Mm.
And she keeps saying how she wants them to kind of go to the absolute darkest, ugliest place to eventually come out of it, which the final scene is that they go to the ugliest place, and it's awful and it's traumatizing. And the last line of the play is her saying, "Thank you, baby, for listening." Cause it's, and I viewed it, and I have other friends who viewed it this way, but I had a debate with someone about this the other day. They're like, well, their marriage, someone was like, oh, well, their marriage is fucked because you can't come back from that. I'm like, no. That was them burning the foundations of their marriage to the ground to build a better, stronger house, anew on less toxic ground.
Mm.
That is what that was, at least in my opinion. And I feel like Broadway needs to kind of do that in general when it comes to equity and inclusion, but we digress. And Juliet, I don't think is bad on an objective level. It's fine. It does what it sets out to do decently well. But I do have other notes, which we've already discussed. In terms of featured actress, so Melanie did not win the Olivier. It was the actress.
She did it.
It was the actress who played Anne Hathaway.
Okay. I would nominate Melanie.
Yes, I would nominate Melanie. Melanie was the performance in that show I enjoyed the most. The two performances I enjoyed the most were Melanie and the actor who played Francois, Frankie. I thought that they were the best at having one foot in cheek and one foot in earnestness. Mm-hmm. And
is Frankie Paolo Jatte's son?
Yes.
Okay.
The one who falls for May.
Yeah.
The virgin. And Paolo was fine. I love me Daddy Paolo. And I would say my third favorite performance after Melanie and Frankie was Stark Sands, who, again, very rare when you're going to hear me say Stark can do wrong, but I just don't think that role is quite up for a nomination because he's sort of like the stand-in douche that we all are supposed to kind of roll our eyes at, and he does it very well, but whatever. This is where we have to get objective here, Adam. I think Betsy will get nominated as Anne Hathaway. I think Betsy will full get nominated. It is not a performance that I would personally nominate. It is not a performance that engaged me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say this as politely as possible. It is a performance that I found a little bit on the selfish side. Because as someone who has written and directed and acted in the past, and granted, I'm not doing all these things in this very moment. I am doing one, but not all three. But I also, you know, having been in it, having done other elements of it, having, you know, seen as much as I have and conversing with actor, director friends, there is a certain kind of acting performance in a comedy where you watch somebody undermine the laughs someone else might get so you can get the laugh. Mm-hmm. And she ends up hurting the scene. And it's something that I watched Betsy do quite a few times in Anne Juliet with her sort of dry, sarcastic, you know, what's the word for it? Vocal fry tone?
Mm-hmm.
Me, it's me. I'm the best friend she's talking about. Like that kind of stuff. And Anne Hathaway has enough one-liners. She doesn't need more. But there were times in that show I would watch Betsy react to somebody. Somebody would come at Betsy and be like, "Pukop! Like, can you believe the craziness that's happening in Paris?" And she's like, "Oh my God, yeah, I can't believe it." And it's, the joke is not supposed to be her joke. But she would kind of go for it, and then the next line, which is supposed to be a joke for somebody else, wouldn't get the laugh. And it made me a little angry because I didn't find it a very giving moment as a scene partner. That is me being honest, and I'm trying to say it politely. Was I polite?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I thought that was very diplomatic of you.
Thank you. Because also, like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that Betsy's extremely talented and very gifted at comedy. I saw her in Last 5 Years where she found laughs that no one else found before.
Yeah.
But it's the Laura Benanti syndrome for me of, like, you are so good at finding laughs, you sometimes have to give a few up for the sake of the scene.
Right. Not everything needs to have a laugh.
You don't have to be the
one getting the laugh.
Yeah, every time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are 10 other people on stage, including someone who is the title role. Maybe let them have a turn.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of this, she will get nominated because it is the kind of performance that a lot of people gravitate towards. And she does sing a very lovely That's the Way It Is.
Yeah, it's nice.
Hot take. Betsy Wolf, good at singing.
She's got an okay voice. Maybe it'll work out for her. I don't know. No. So we're saying Bonnie and Allie.
Probably Betsy.
Hopefully Nursey.
And then the true coin toss is what happens with Alex. Where does Alex go?
Right.
And if Alex decides to be eligible.
Have we heard anything about Emily Skinner's performance?
I hear that she doesn't really have enough for a nomination.
That's too bad. Oh, Natasha Yvette Williams, though, could also be.
Absolutely. I think if I'm being super hardcore realistic, we are looking at Bonnie, Allie, Betsy, Natasha, and who was I going to say? Alex Newell.
Mm.
But again, up in the air, figuring out if Alex decides to be eligible and where Alex decides to go. But if Alex decides featured actress, I think those are our five, with the possible exception of Allie or Natasha getting swapped out for Melanie, Nursey, and Juliet.
Sure, sure.
Before, and that last week I had Ruthie in there because I had heard so much about Ruthie, and having now seen it, she could, anything's possible. I just did not find her.
I thought she was good, but I wouldn't necessarily nominate it.
No.
It doesn't feel like enough stage time.
And that's the thing, is like, I have seen Beggar Women who have really made the most of it. This is the thing. Ruthie and Gayton, really, too, in his final scene, it doesn't seem like they're going for a bold interpretation with their parts. They're trying to be respectful of mental illness, which I understand and I'm not against, but it makes the Beggar Woman less of a memorable figure.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that we can both agree on, but that I would say with talking about Sweeney again, is that a lot of the melodrama is gone.
Yeah. Which is so somber.
Yeah, like the heightened level of everything, it just isn't.
Sorry, there not all the somber. Time. Lived in. It all feels very lived in. The only two people for me who were really kind of playing the maximum impact of the material were the Beatle and then Nick Christopher.
Pirelli,
yeah.
He was great.
I mean, if I had one note for him, and it was also my note for Jordan Fisher, is there's a bit of a modern sensibility of how they sing the material. Mm. I didn't mind it with Nick because Nick sounded so good and the performance itself was so
hilarious.
Yeah, it's hilarious and complete. Yeah. But I mean, again, like people I know people who fucking were nitpicking the last Fiddler revival because they found that we're talking like opera queens who were like nitpicking the Three Daughters because, oh, their vowel placements were off. But then go see Sweeney and called it perfect. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Musically, objectively is not perfect because there's an inconsistency in the style of singing with a lot of the actors. And then the night I saw it, Jordan Fisher had like three major bum notes in Joanna. I'm just saying we're talking about sort of the post-pandemic of everyone kind of getting swept up and stuff. And I'm talking about older gents of the Bachelor persuasion who tried to convince me in years gone by that certain performances weren't good because, oh, the vowels and the phrasing and the such and such. And then come in and are, you know, going off on this Sweeney as perfection. And I'm like, no, there are audible issues here. And I wouldn't care about them so much if I found the whole package super thrilling. But because I don't find the whole package super thrilling, I'm going to start complaining about the details.
Nitpicking.
To quote the man who's dead, God is in the details.
Correct. Yeah. R.I.P.
Featured actor.
In a musicale?
A musicale. Justin Cooley. Done.
Here Justin Cooley. I would potentially say Stephen Boyer also.
I think Stephen's great. I would absolutely nominate him. I'm a little nervous that nominators might feel a little too Kimberly happy and will look for places to cut corners, and he is the first to
go. Okay.
But I would not.
Kevin DeLaGuilla for
Some Like It Hot.
1,000%. Maybe Kevin Gahoon for Shucked.
You think?
Maybe.
You know what? Because I originally had Gaten down as a deaf, and now I'm a little more on the fence about Gaten with Sweeney, I would put Kevin in there as a very likely contender. He definitely has the most one-liners in the show.
He's the most one-liners, and he feels the most authentic.
Yeah. It's also like, Kevin's been around for a while.
Yeah, I've seen him in so many things. He was the very first Hedwig guy I ever saw.
I'm sure he was amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah, and like, he's been around for a while, has always done great work, and it's just sort of, you know, he's got a good part in a musical that people are seeing.
Yeah.
And like, he's doing good work.
Yeah.
You know, they do that weird thing where he starts getting very homoerotic with John Bellman, which, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who could resist?
Well, no, it's not weird because of the homoeroticism for John. Believe me, anytime I go see John in anything, I'm like, yeah, no, we come to this place to thirst. But it's more that it just sort of comes so late in the show and never gets addressed again. And I'm like, I would have loved a moment.
Well, he does have that crystal ball joke.
But that's not gay. The joke is, if I had a crystal ball, I'd walk funny. But
I think it was, if I had a crystal ball, I might walk different today.
No, I think if I had a crystal ball, I'd be walking funny, something like that. There's the actor who plays Jim Conley in Parade, which I know he's getting a lot of buzz for a possible nomination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wasn't totally sold on nominating him in Act One. Who's the actor who played Conley originally in Parade?
Oh, I wish I could remember his name. I can hear his voice is crystal clear in my head, but I don't remember his name.
Hold on, who is it? It is Alex Joseph Grayson. Sorry, no, that's who's playing Conley.
That's current.
God, motherfucker, I'm a disaster. the original Jim Conley, Rufus Bonds Jr.
Oh, right.
Yeah, his performance on the cast recording is so good. Because, and I could very much be reading into it, but I felt like the way he does certain line readings, and that's what he said, you got the sense that, you know, this Conley had the potential to be violent and scary, and also was sort of channeling a lot of his inner rage of the world he's in his testimony, because it's always on things like, these stupid rednecks never gonna know, and like, just throw it on the ground. And the Conley here, Grayson, he was a little more calm in his testimony. It was a little more like, I've been coached. So he's like a motherfucker, but the performance itself wasn't quite as alive as I wanted it to be until Act Two during the chain gang number, where I was like, oh, now we came to play. And so I was like, yeah, he could absolutely get nominated. He's tearing the floors up with this song.
All right. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. And if I had my druthers, Paul Alexander Nolan would get in there too, but we've yet to nominate him for a Tony for literally anything.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy. He is the most healthily sung Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar of all time. He built, what is it? It's like I think it's a B flat in Everything's All Right. When I'm gone. Yep, yeah. And his face is just so relaxed.
Well, let's not forget Gethsemane when he's screaming his face off.
Yeah, and looking so relaxed.
Just so calm. Well, okay, but that was... I guess we're still technically in either side of this category, because Alex could be nominated for Best Supporting Actor also.
Sure, sure.
Best Featured Actor, excuse me. But that is a voice... I think one of the things that's so impressive about that voice to me is how relaxed and effortless it looks.
Absolutely.
Where you're like, oh, that sound is just flowing out of you. And you're not like gripping to the floor, where, you know what I mean? We're not like Jennifer Holliday, like straddling that track in the floor moment. It's just like, here, let me just toss these notes out. Oh, it's nothing. Oh, here's this one too. It's that to me is one of the things that's so impressive about that song, is and her delivery of that song, their delivery of that song. is just the finesse and ease with which those notes come out of her body.
They're on, I believe, the top line of the opening song in fact.
Yes.
And I remember hearing their voice on it just going, oh my God, are they going to have it in them for their big number? And just popped it out.
They had a note near the top of Act Two in a group number where they had one line and like picked some high note to riff off of. And I was like, what was that? You didn't even have to do that. And it was just like, oh yeah, and here's this too. It was massively impressive. And I think that, but the reason why it was so impressive is because it never feels forced. It just feels like breath.
Yeah, no, it's impressive without seeming like a struggle, like seeming like an effort. And what I will also say is because it's impressive due to the ease, it doesn't feel like necessarily a trick. It feels so organic.
Right.
It's something that I have a lot of issues with in singing on Broadway these days is, you know, is it higher? Are they singing higher? Is it a good song? And I think there's sort of a little bit of that in Alex's song in Shucked, but I don't think that Alex himself is, you know, popping off a party trick. It's just very organically from them, which is why I don't get get angry watching it. I've gotten angry watching other people do that.
Because you're not watching the effort.
Yes. And again, Alex is giving a good performance the rest of the time as well. You know,
correct. Delivers
a lot of their one-liners great, has this really wonderful, like sort of babyish smile. So anytime they do sort of like an "Ain't I a Stinker" moment.
Yeah.
They flash them pearly whites. And
but also delivers some really nice tender moments. Like, does a really nice job.
Yeah. And also, on top of all of this, I mean, granted, it happens offstage during the epilogue, but we assume rides John Bellman so hard that they make a baby, you know?
They have chemistry.
They do. It's good.
I have to say.
It's good chemistry. It's,
yeah.
First of all, how can you not have chemistry with John? That is a tall drink of fuck me. Am I right?
I think it would be pretty difficult to. I can't talk about this anymore. This is going to go down a path.
We did not do this episode to thirst, but John is another person where I'm like, we need to get you into a proper role for a Tony nomination. Should have been nominated for Tootsie, if we're being honest.
Should have been. I actually remembered during his first song in Tampa, how funny he was in that number in Tootsie.
Yep.
I was like, I wish this was as funny as that number was in Tootsie, because that number was like out of control.
People shit on the Tootsie score a lot, and I have to say, I understand that like the music was not Yazbek's best, but those were some funny lyrics. Those lyrics were great.
Yeah, there's some. That whole show was so funny, and
I
didn't care about it at all, but it was hilarious.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, but we digress.
Yeah. Moving on.
Let's get featured in plays. Leading actress in a play. It's Chastain, it's Linney, it's McDonald, it's Comer. Done. Here we are. Leading actor in a play is going to be interesting because we have Stephen McKinley Henderson for Between Riverside and Crazy, Jefferson Mace for Christmas Carol, Sean Hayes for Goodnight Oscar. I think his name's Marcel Speaks for Fat Ham. We have Corey Hawkins and his co-star for Top Dog, Underdog.
Oh, right. Yeah. Mateen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Marcel. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Marcel Spears for Fat Ham.
Yeah. I could see both of the Top Dog actors making their way up.
Yep. And then also Nathan Lane and Danny Burstein, depending on who's eligible for Pictures from Home. And then, I mean, I wonder if he's going to be eligible for fucking Peter Pan Goes Wrong, Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. That's some fresh news, folks.
Just announced today. Funny magic man, Neil Patrick Harris, is going to be playing a part in Peter Pan Goes Wrong for 3.5 weeks. And it just so happens to be one of the performances is opening night.
Good for her.
She can be eligible again. But she closes her run right before the nominations come out. So here we are.
We shall see.
I can't wait to see how this turns out. Mm-hmm. I think We have, oh, and also Wendell Pierce for Death of a Salesman. It's it's a lot. I think Sean and Marcel will be nominated. They are the leads in shows that are currently running. And Fat Ham is a strong contender for play. And Goodnight Oscar, by all accounts, is coming in because of Sean.
Right.
The lead actor in Life of Pi could get nominated. He is quite good. I personally would not nominate him. But again, most likely in a play nominee, it's running. And if that's the case, then we have a minimum of two more. Could be Wendell Pierce for Death of a Salesman. Could be Stephen McKinley Henderson. Could be Jefferson Mays or one of the top dog underdog guys. I personally, if you had to like put a gun to my head, like, Matt, you can only do two more. Who's it going to be? I would say Corey Hawkins for Top Dog Underdog. And I would say Jefferson Mays for Christmas Carol. That would be my five. And I ain't mad at her. So don't ask.
I'm taking your word because you saw all of those things and I didn't. So
yeah. Okay. Lead actress of a musical. I feel like this is going to be pretty easy.
I mean, I think it's kind of set up for itself. Vicky.
Yes.
Surefire nominee and probable winner.
Yes. We don't like to say for sure because it's still so early. But like,
I said probable, not for sure.
I'm sitting here feeling comfy and cozy, but we can't say it too loudly because then we'll jinx the bitch.
Fine. Okay. So Vicky.
Yes.
Anna Lee will get a nomination.
Michaela.
Maybe the lead in New York, New York.
Anna, yeah. So that's the one who's probably the biggest question mark because I've heard very strong things. Yeah. I actually heard strong things about both of them. But she apparently has like four really big numbers. And that could do it. And if that's the case, I think she would be kicking out Sarah in Into the Woods.
Mm. Because, oh, sure.
Because the one thing I hear about Camelot is that the three leads all absolutely fuck. That is the one thing. I mean, even people on the fence about the show are like, oh no, the three leads kill. Oh, Jordan Donica in fucking Camelot. We haven't thought of him for featured.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Put him in there too.
Yeah. So yeah, last week I think I had Sarah in there over Anna, but I think I'm going to say Anna now. Lorna Courtney in And Juliet is around. I just don't see it. But you know, stranger things have happened.
I think that show is more about that show than her in that role.
I don't see Lenady in Bad Cinderella getting in there. I don't see Adriana in Some Like It Hot getting in there.
No.
Yeah. And then Caroline, I think Caroline would have a shot if nominators just really, really, really loved Shucked. But I don't think that she's the number one option they have to nominate a performer. I think Alex is number one, Kevin is number two, and Caroline is number three.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Actor in a musical. Miss Platt.
Miss Platt.
Miss Platt, Miss Groban.
Mr. Borrell.
You think?
I think.
Okay. Well, then that changes things. Because I would say last week, I believe what I had was Borrell, Jay Harrison, Platt, Robin, and Burnham. But I know there are a lot of people who are intrigued at the idea of Brian in Into the Woods. I don't see it happening. But again, who knows? The kicker is... people are talking about Colton Ryan in New York, New York, as much as talking about Anna.
Yeah, that's true.
And
now, if NPH had transferred with Into the Woods, I could see him having gotten a nomination for that performance. Speaking of NPH.
Yes. Well, I thought he was quite good in Woods. In fact, I thought he was better than Brian. And I don't like NPH all that much. I like Brian more on principle.
He was one of the cast members that I missed most in the transfer. I thought that I think Sarah was great on her own. I think that his presence led to a comfortability on her part that was so lovely. Mm-hmm. And the two of them worked together so well in that Encores version. Yeah. That
I mean, both productions I thought was missing a lot of hyper energy. You know, not both Brian and Neil, as well as Sarah, and honestly, Heather. Bettina seemed to be the only one of that group that understood there are three midnights. Three midnights. God, time is of the essence. Everyone else was like, yeah, so let's go get brunch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we got another item. Oh, cool. Want to like sit and smoke this joint for a second? Great.
I got it from a man in the tower. Woo. Cool. That actually made me laugh, but still, you know, it never felt like the stakes were high for any of them. But yeah, Cole and I hear really great things about In New York, New York. And a lot of people who have seen him have said, don't count him out. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to not count him out. And I think if you're honestly bump out anybody, it would probably be Christian for me.
Unless
nominators are just so over Lincoln Center and their big musical revivals. I'm like, fuck Andrew Burnap. And I'm like, oh, just tell me where.
Right. Is there a list?
I'm sorry. Will you pay for the room or the bush? So, okay. Your final five. Give me all of them.
Of what? Of actor?
Actor, maybe.
I think I'm with you. Well, let's see. I think so much of this is going to hinge on me seeing New York, New York. Because I haven't seen Parade yet, but I've listened to the recording, and I am seeing it at the end of this month. And I feel like Ben is a shoo-in.
He's absolutely a shoo-in for a nomination. At the moment of who I've seen, he's probably who I would vote for.
Front runner.
Yeah. And I liked Jay a lot in Some Like It Hot. I just did not love Some Like It Hot.
Yeah. But yeah, so I would say Ben, Jay, Groban.
You said Borel.
Oh, Borel and Burnap. Yeah. I think you're right. I think that the Borel spot might vacillate depending on how well New York goes over.
Yeah. And it could, I mean, again, based on how critics have been going these days, it could go over quite nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Final. Does that bring us to best?
Musical and play. Play, I actually think, is a little more interesting than musical. But like musical, I think I can knock this out. Kimberly, Some Like It Hot, Shucked, and Juliet, New York, New York. There, done. Here we are. Oh, and Revivals. Yeah. But Revivals, it's, you know, Into the Woods, Parade, Sweeney, and Camelot. That's easy peasy. Mm-hmm. Revival, Play, Death of a Salesman, Top Dog, Underdog, and then
Piano Lesson,
I guess. Or there's Piano Lesson, Ohio State Murders, and I feel like there's another one that we're missing. Am I making this up? No. Maybe I'm making this up. Hold, please. Oh, and while I do that, let's take one last break.
Whee!
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar.
Yeah.
You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar. You're the nimble thread.
And we're back. Okay. So, it's Piano Lesson, Death of a Salesman, Top Dog, Underdog, Ohio State Murders. Shit, no, I don't want you. I want the 2022 to 2023 season. Sorry. I am on IBDB, everybody, because I do the work for us all.
Ibba dibba.
Oh, Doll's House.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah, but of course. So I think we're looking at Doll's House, Top Dog, Underdog, and Death of a Salesman, if I'm being honest. I would not be surprised. Unless they can't do four, unless it's, you know, super close in the voting.
Right. So best play. You said this was the interesting category for you. Let's hear it.
So we have, I think, two locks, which are Leopoldstadt and Fat Ham. Leopoldstadt was the front runner for most of the season because it's so far been one of the few plays to actually do well at the box office. It's starting to teeter out now, but for like the majority of October, November, December was grossing like $1 million a week pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Got good reviews. It is Tom Stoppard. It's probably the last time we're ever going to be able to nominate Stoppard or vote for him. So, you know, get it while it's hot or get it while it's lukewarm, I guess. But then Fat Ham, again, Pulitzer winner, transferring from Off-Broadway last year, coming in at the end of the season. And I can't stress this enough. It is really good and, like, not a chore to sit through. It is quite fun. And
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. I think Life of Pi will probably get in there just because of the epicness of it all, even though, again, I don't think it's a good play or even that good of a production.
Do you think... I mean, I guess it wasn't so much more about the adaptation itself, but more about the production. Do you think Christmas Carol would get a nomination?
I thought about that. So I don't think so.
Okay.
Because when it comes to play, it usually goes very prestige-y. They don't usually go with, like, what's fun. And I think if Life of Pi was not a West End transfer based off of a book, it would not be quite as high in everyone's nominating list. They'd be like, oh, you know, this puppet.
No, no Kite Runner?
Girl. The Kite Runner?
You just said West End transfer based on a book. That was the only reason I brought it up.
I know. But the absolute bottom of the barrel of the season for me was The Kite Runner. My God, that show. But we also have...
Well, according to that one publication, it was homophobic trash. Remember that?
Yep, I do remember that. It's not homophobic trash. It's just stupid. But Cost of Living is a Pulitzer winner. Mm-hmm. Between Riverside and Crazy is a Pulitzer winner. Thanksgiving Play, I know, is very well regarded and considered very topical. So, I mean, those could all get in. Peter Pan Goes Wrong is a lot of fun. It's not going to get a play nomination, but I actually enjoyed it a bit more than Play That Goes Wrong. Maybe because I knew what to expect, and also because it's Peter Pan. We knew the plot, so when things went wrong, we were like, oh, I know how this is supposed to go. It's fun. Right.
This is when the crocodile's supposed to be coming on.
Exactly. There's Ain't No Mo, which I feel like could surprisingly get in there. It's just that it was such a blip in a lot of ways.
It was so fast.
It made noise while it was here, which I give them a lot of credit for.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how that noise will transfer. Will that give it a play nomination? Will Jordan then also get a featured actor nomination while Crystal Lucas Perry gets a featured actress nomination? I feel like her field's a little more open, so she can get in there. I don't know. So yeah, we have Leopoldstadt, we have Fat Ham, we have Life of Pi. Probably Between Riverside and Crazy. And then it's like among Ain't No Mo, Cost of Living, Christmas Carol, I guess. And and then there's also Prima Facie, which just Olivier for best play.
And actress.
Well, she is, from what I understand, she is so incredible, she is winning. And also there's Goodnight Oscar, which I know a lot of people like, but again, it's supposedly more about Sean Hayes than anything else.
It's a really stacked season.
Yeah, and very much so for original plays, and no one's talking about it.
Which is, yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah. It's so fun. I might write a little slide about this on my Insta about, like, pay attention to the plays this season, because that's where they're going to be interesting at the Tonys.
I mean, it's definitely going to make the race for certain things a little bit tighter than they have been in the last few years.
Oh, yeah. Actor, director, play, and I would say, like, featured actor in a play are there. Just so many options. So many options. I look forward to seeing how it all shakes out.
We'll have them in a month.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, I know you haven't seen that many, but if you had to make a top five play category, what would we do?
I don't know. I haven't seen enough of the plays.
Why are you so uncultured, you fuck?
I don't, because I go to things that people give me tickets for, and people aren't giving me enough tickets to plays.
We got to change that for you.
I know. I also need to just, like, buy tickets to plays, but yeah.
I'm trying to win them $10 tickets to Prima. I want to see her.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. I will say, like, the remaining plays that are still running this season, I'm interested in seeing, I think, all of them.
I mean,
which is rare to say.
What if Summer 1976 is actually incredible? What if that happens?
I mean, that'd be great.
Listen, stranger things have happened, okay? Manhattan Theater Club, every time we count them out, they come back guns blazing.
Or they give us that, what was that play that Blythe Danner was in, The Country House?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that with Sarah Jessica Parker?
No.
No, that was something else. They did something else together.
Right. Yeah, no. The Country House was horrible.
Yes, no. No, Manhattan Theater Club definitely has a spotty track record. I can't speak too ill of them because they may or may not be reading my play soon.
Well, but, yes. But, well, but last year they also had How I Learned to Drive. So, you know.
My absolute favorite thing last season. All right. So, Adam.
Yeah. Hi.
Anything we didn't cover that you wanted to cover for the Tonys this year?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like I've been so unhelpful in this podcast. I haven't had my usual amount of contribution to offer.
Things.
I will say that, no, I don't think we missed anything. I think it's been kind of to speculate over the season itself, it's been kind of crazy how many new things have opened this season.
It really is. And a lot of good stuff, some stuff I didn't love, but also a lot of variety, which I really want to...
Really varietal season. Yeah. And and I really felt, I don't know, for all my complaining about audiences, and I do mean every single word, if you're listening to this podcast and you have been a pain in the ass audience member, or you've been performative when you're seeing something, you can like something and not scream and laugh harder than everyone else just to prove that you got a joke or prove that you liked a song or a performance. Don't embarrass yourself.
Or to prove that you know somebody in the show. That was the case that a few things in this whole. I'm like, okay, we get it. You have a friend in this.
The performative audience stuff is driving me crazy. Right. But even with that aside, it's been thrilling to go back and see so many shows in audiences that are full. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to see theater sort of back up and running and kind of thriving in a way. It's been nice. I hope that that as fertile as this season has been, that it continues on in the next few years. Just it would be nice to continue to see more new stuff. Well, I mean, Jesus Christ, we've got Once Upon a One More Time starting us off real hot this year. So,
and then Back to the Future, but then we get Here Lies Love. Right. We get Here Lies
finally, Love. Finally, yeah.
Finally, and we have Lori in her thriller. And we have some other fun things on the veranda.
That's true. So that's true.
It's in Sign and Sydney Brustein's window, supposedly transferring sometime next season. Possibly in the Jones, but who knows? And yeah, we'll see. It'll be very exciting. Adam, where can the listeners find you if you want them to find you?
You know, just the IG, the little old Instagram, just Adam Ells, AdamElS.
Okay. If you want to follow me, I'm on Instagram at Matt Koplik, usual spelling. If you like the podcast, give us a nice 5-star rating, please, or a little review. There was a brief period where I got like 2 1-star ratings in a row, and I was very nervous that my overall rating was going to go down. But then I got 2 5-star reviews, and all is right in the world. But still, guys, let's not let the 1-stars get the best of us, shall we? So, let me read both of these reviews back to back. Cue the Light in the Piazza overture. The most fun Broadway mind out there. 5 stars. There's something weirdly comforting about this show and Matt's way to be informative, funny, inclusive to all theater minds, and go off on tangents that don't seem relevant, but paradoxically fit into the strange dance he does on each show. No matter the guest, conversation glides effortlessly like a glee club singer at Skater Planet. It's a Broadway geek's dream show. That one got Adam good.
That's a good one.
That was a great one. Thank you, Peter. Next one is 5 stars. So much fun and smart takes. Matt brings so much life, comedy, and smarts to the theater world. Love listening to his podcast for the laughs and the thoughtful knowledge about happenings on Broadway. Thank you, MS Dubs. Yeah, that has been a wonderful way to end this episode. Adam, who do we close this out with today? Who's a Tony bitch?
Oh, well, I mean, we've got... I feel like we don't want to do, you don't want to do repeats, right? Of are we trying to do a fresh, yeah. Voice?
Yeah, I try not to do repeats. I wondered if today might be the first time we've closed out with a man.
Oh.
Because usually we do divas, but I feel like in honor of the fact that he's not going to get a nomination, despite how much I want him to, if we close out with Mr. Nolan.
Sure. Or I was going to say, because they have straddled both categories, you could give us a little Alex Newell, Mama Will Provide.
Have I done Alex? Hold on.
Maybe you did already. Maybe I missed it.
Because I don't know, because I have, honestly, I stopped cataloging the divas a while back, which is bad on my part. I should still be doing it, but it just got so long and I got too tired and depressed and I stopped. But actually, you know what? Let's do that. Let's close out with Newell. Let's close out with LX doing some Mama Will Provide, or that like 20 seconds of Shucked that they released on YouTube today.
Oh yeah, that would, or yeah, or that. Either or. Just popping those notes.
Yeah, like it's a queef.
What?
Just popping it out easy, like it's air.
Popping it like a queef. All right.
I think that should be the new term when we were talking about effortlessly hitting a high note. Popping it like it's queefs.
She queefed it. She just queefed it out.
I wanted a nice queef double. Before we recorded, Adam and I were quoting Donna Murphy in Center Stage. I want a clean double. I want a queef double. All right, so we'll close out with Alex. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We're probably going to take a week off and then come back in 2 weeks after I've seen Doll's House and Thanksgiving Play, so we can discuss a bit further. And yeah, check us out later. Have a great rest of your next 2 weeks, you guys.
Bye!
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.